とだけあるだろう。そんな時パッと目の前そっと照らしてくれる歩き方。
つまらないネタばっかり手伏してちゃつまんない。
そんな穴にはまって抜け出せなかった昨日までの僕ら。
締めなんてなくてもいいのさ、ゼロなんか止めなくていいのさ。
僕らこのパーティーがあれば
そんなにでもなれる。
Hello, you're listening to Otaku Spirit Anime Cast. My name is Andrew, and I'm joined here with Chris.
Yo.
Today's episode is our summer 2021 anime season reviews. It's time to dive into the summer 2021 anime season, let you guys know what turned out to be great or what didn't turn out to be great, as well as, you know, give our thoughts on each show, give you some information on each show so that you can decide at that point if it's something that you missed that you might want to go back and watch, because we can all do with more on our watch list. And that's what technically Otaku Spirit does. Is we put lots of things on your watch list. So today we have Spirit Chronicles Seirei Gensoki, The Case Study of Vanitas, Tsukimichi Moonlit Fantasy, 2 Year Eternity, Kageki Shoujo, Girlfriend Girlfriend, The Duke of Death and His Maid, Mother of the Goddess Dormitory, The Honor at Magic High School, Peach Boy Riverside, Welcome to Demon School, Erdemakun Season 2, Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid S, and I'm Standing on a Million Lives Second Season.
You know, I can make this like a 15-second long review. You know that, right?
Sure.
Every show is the best show ever.
I wouldn't go that far. I can't get on that train. Sorry, can't get on that train. But that's fine. Not every show is for everybody, and that's what we acknowledge here. But it doesn't mean that you have to stare and bash it. Like, I'm not going to bash it. Like our first one, Spirit Chronicles. The randomizer apparently wanted us to start off with a bang, so we're starting off with Spirit Chronicles Seirei Gensoki, so that's fantastic. Yeah. So yeah, this one was streaming on Crunchyroll, went for 12 episodes. Studio is TMS Entertainment. Source is a light novel. Genres are action, adventure, harem, drama, romance, fantasy, crying harem girl. And yeah, so this one follows a guy named Haruto early on. So it basically takes place in Japan. There's a guy named Haruto. He is apparently really not getting over this crush that apparently might possibly have found somebody new. So he made like some kind of, you know, childhood promise to some girl that they were going to grow up and get married together. And so usually we have the female girl is the one that can't get over the promise. In this case, it's the guy. He can't get over the promise. So it's trending new things. But essentially, at some point when he was older, he went to this academy. She was there. They haven't seen each other for a while, and she was with some guy. And so I guess he assumes that they got married. You know, you see your childhood friend walking with another male. It's like suddenly, no, this can't be. She's not allowed to have other boyfriends.
She has like five children, you know.
Yeah, obviously she's grown old. She has grandchildren already just because she's seen them walking together. I don't know. I didn't get that whole aspect of how that came to the conclusion of obviously they're you know, getting together and sleeping together and stuff. But anyways, that aside, he's really upset about this. He's on a bus, and he's on Buscoon, basically. And Buscoon, he looks across
himself. We know what Buscoon does.
He's in Buscoon. There's a cute lolly across from him that for some reason he keeps looking at, and she keeps looking at him. I don't know how they know each other, but they're obviously seeing each other. And then at some point, they made a connection right there. And yeah, for some reason, Buscoon decides, I'm Buscoon, I need to drive erratically. So it just randomly starts to veer down the street, running into everything.
We do know that Buscoon has a thing against cute girls. So obviously, Buscoon's seen a cute girl, messed up, and missed the cute girl. And instead hit a train.
That's what's confusing me. I think that Buscoon realized, no, the isekai's inside of me, and it's supposed to be in front of me. How do I hit him if he's inside of me? And so he said, I'm going to get the aid of a train. Train-kun must help me.
Train-kun can help.
So he runs into everything, rushes out there and gets hit by Train-kun. Train-kun, like, just crumbles all over Bus-kun and just destroys him and destroys Haruto at the same time. We're assuming he's dead. But anyways, Haruto is then transported into a fantasy world because this is an isekai. And he goes inside of the body of a poor boy named Ryo. And Ryo is in, like, the slums of this kingdom. He's, like, you know, doesn't have anything. He's living in a place that just has a bunch of thugs in it, I'm assuming. And at some point, these thugs come home, and they're like, oh, man, you were, like, really sick. You actually made it through it, apparently. You're not, you know, 2 weeks or something like that. And they have this bag. And this bag,
not suspicious in any way, shape, or form.
Just a bag.
It's just a bag.
Has a princess in it, you know, as you'd usually put in bags.
That's what bandits do. They put princesses in bags.
Ryo ends up going out. And now this is the interesting thing, because it seems like when Haruto goes inside of Ryo, at that point, Ryo is kind of establishing, like, whoa, I have these memories. Why do I have these memories? Dude, whoever got in my brain is really obsessed with some girl and thinks that she's cheating on him for some reason. He goes out, ends up running into some guards. The guards are, well, not really guards, but a guard with a princess and some other girl. And they're looking for a princess. And so he's like, hey, I don't know where they're at. And he goes back and he ends up, yeah, there's like everybody's dead. And there's an assassin there. And then some spirit appears and tells Ryo, hey, you can use these spirit arts. And he uses these spirit arts, which are really powerful in this world, to beat the assassin. Finds out that there is the bag is full of potatoes. I mean, a princess. And then takes the princess back to the guard. He's immediately assumed that he's the one that did it. So they start interrogating him. And the princess wakes up and is like, no, wait. That's a isekai kid that saved me. No, he didn't say that. She says, he saved me. So don't beat the crap out of him. And as a favor from the king for saving the princess, he ends up applying and joining the Royal Academy, where obviously he's seen as a commoner, and he's dirty, and he shouldn't be here. Eventually ends up having to leave the kingdom, goes on a journey to find the person in this world, Ryo's heritage, basically, and then eventually to find the killer of his mother in this world. So, yeah, and then gets overpowered, travels to different cities, ends up finding harem members, acting, you know, basically flirting with them and dating them until they get really liking him, and then goes, oh, I'm sorry, you like me? I have to leave. And they cry as he leaves, gets more overpowered stuff, gets a Raftelia, because, you know, Shield Hero's popular, so he's got to get a Raftelia character. Mm-hmm. gets a Spirit Girl, all these kind of stuff. And, yeah, that's basically the gist. Just a lot of traveling. So your thoughts on Seri Gensoki Spirit Chronicles?
I actually kind of really like this show. My biggest problem is probably going to be the ending. All that set aside, I enjoyed the story. Really liked the cast. Not so much Ryo, but hey, he's got his own problems, and we can eventually kind of deal with him. But when it comes down to it, The story to me seemed really interesting. They had a lot of things going on in here. You have between class infighting. You have your basic character archetypes that are working in here. A lot of interesting intrigue into the background of the kingdoms itself. So there's a lot of really neat things going on in here that are trying to do kind of different things from standard isekais. Like Andrew had mentioned, the memories were imported into a person. It did not replace the person, which is a very, very interesting thing. One of the things that me and Andrew had gone back and forth about is whether or not, and this is something that you'd almost have to have either read the light novel or not, is whether or not Ryo and Naruto are if there is an inner dialogue between the two, or if one of them has overpowered the other. There's some interesting intrigue there, which would be fascinating to kind of explore. But other than that, I kind of like the show. A little bit disappointed on the ending, like I said. And I don't want to discount that Andrew's going to get into it, and you're going to
get kind of an idea. Yeah, I was going to say, a little bit disappointed. You're playing good cop really hard. let's not just kind of glaze over that one. No, I kind of agree. I think a lot of my frustrations, I'm assuming, are all based on the idea of it being a bad adaptation. It just feels like a bad adaptation. I don't even know the source material, but it's just those things where you see some inconsistency in how it's telling the story. So your assumption is that, well, it's probably because they're not explaining this properly. My big key thing was I was fascinated by the Rio Haruto thing. And I wanted them to do something with that. And it felt like here and there it was hinting at things, but it never really explained those things. Like I said, right at the very beginning, in a inner dialogue, Rio, the child that Haruto goes inside of, he establishes, I have these memories in me now, but I don't care. I'm going to go find the killer of my mother. So at that point, it's establishing, I am Rio. And then that's the last time you ever have that sort of distinction, because later on, when the idea of somebody else possibly being isekai into this world, which that is a thing in this particular world, is it's not just one character. It establishes that there's other possible people that could have been. And at some point, he's in a conversation with somebody about Tokyo and stuff. And at that point, from then on, it always seems like he's talking in the perspective of Haruto. Like, I'm in this world. But yet, he's always driven by the things of Rio. I'm Haruto, I was isekai'd, but I got to find the killer of my parents. Rio's parents, not the other world. So it's always that way from then on. And it was funny because at some point, it seemed like it was having him conflict with the two selves, because at some point, he beats the snot out of somebody. He's covered in blood, and he's out on his own. He's like, you know, I've scared people because of what I did. And now as he's out there, he goes, I almost forgot about the killer of my mother. And it's like, it seems like at that point, he's being switched back to Rio. But it never does, and he goes right back to Haruto. Again, it doesn't really explain it that way, but it feels like probably the original source material was probably hitting very heavy on the idea either there being a trigger to switch him back and forth between the two selves, or a mending of the minds. Like, they're blended. Like, he just always thinks that he has two mothers and two fathers. The memories just kind of become one. Well, he'll think, you know, I need to go get something to drink. I must go down to the convenience store. Oh, wait, I can't go to the convenience store. I'm not in that world. Ah, crap. This world, this place. Is that what they're doing? That would be really interesting. And it would have been a cool concept. But here, it seems like it's completely glazed over. Like, we don't want to establish that. We don't have time to cover that. We need to get him to this point in the story because source material paints.
Yeah.
It feels like a source material. And I knew that early on from my impressions, because I was doing pretty much weekly impressions on this show on YouTube, and a lot of the people on the source material side were like, yeah, it seems this is going, the way the pacing they're going, they're trying to get to this point because this is going to be a prologue. This anime is a prologue to the source material going into the major arc. Hmm. Everything, all this stuff is just build up. This is just his opening story, and the real story is after this. So unless we get a second season, this is going to be prime grade A example of source material bait. And it felt like it based on the last episode. If you ever have a show where the last episode, the music for the ED ramps up, or the OP, sometimes it has the OP. If you hear the music ramping up at the very end of the last episode and suddenly it starts introducing a whole bunch of characters, that's a dang source material bait. Like, pure, that's a source material bait. It's frustrating.
It is interesting to know that this is kind of like the prologue of the story. That is a fascinating concept, and it would make sense because it would be basically detailing
so much time jump.
Yeah, you're detailing all of the setup of everything of Rio's life. So yeah, that's an interesting concept. But yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, we've made our thoughts known on source material bait. It is frustrating as all get out when you get to that point and you go, yeah, we see what you did here.
Yeah. You're not fooling nobody.
You're not fooling nobody.
But that all said, that's the frustrating thing, is that I wanted to enjoy this show. I mean, yes, it is literally Kirito. The Seiyu's the same.
So Kirito.
He gets a jacket. He looks
super cool. The
Kirito
jacket, everything.
Yeah, he's Kirito through and through. Color, hair color, all that stuff.
And
demeanor.
The voice actor.
Yeah, the Seiyu's there. It is frustrating because it is something that I want to enjoy. And I did enjoy a lot of the steps. Unfortunately, by like halfway point, maybe three quarters of the way into it, I kind of started having a feeling that both this was going to be a source material bait. They weren't going to get into anything. I kind of just felt like we were not going to actually have anything established or completed in this particular story arc. And that's, and I kind of had to come to an agreement with myself that that's going to be the case. And I think that helped it not make me as mad as it should have made me mad, because it felt like it was a lot of just traveling around and making girls cry. So can I establish, this is probably the biggest jerk of a protagonist in a harem show.
Oh, I don't like. I said I don't like him.
This guy's an absolute dirtbag. Because, like I mentioned earlier, not only is he going around and getting harem members, this is a case where he goes around and he flirts. He takes girls on dates, and then when they're going, "I love you, can I be with you?" He's like, "No, I'm sorry, I got to leave tomorrow, and I can't love you back." And then they start crying, and he's like, "He literally looks like he doesn't understand why they fell in love with him," and it's like, you took her on a date. You basically buttered her up with words, like the way that you spoke about her and flirted through somebody else. You bought her a present, and now you're like, wait, she's in love with me, but I have to leave tomorrow. And then he leaves, and they're crying. Like, this is literally this character. He's a absolute dirtbag. He plays them up. And like I said, after that last one, one of the later girls, I literally said, I think this guy has a crying girl fetish. Like, he doesn't like girls. Like, he literally will never reciprocate. He just likes to see them cry. And that's something that he gets, I don't know, his jollies off of. That's the feeling that I had later on. He's just a dirtbag. I just hate him. Anyways, but yeah, I like the world. Very, very expansive. He went to a lot of places. Nothing was really overly fleshed out. So don't get me wrong. It's not like he was going into an area and getting like some deep lore. It's just, it was an expansive world. And he was traveling a lot. And he got like this big picture of all these kingdoms, the spirits, the spirit village, his original hometown, which had a different aesthetic to it, which implies this idea of different cultures that may have been brought over from another world, which is always kind of an interesting aspect to me. But unfortunately, in the end, we didn't even get a climactic battle. There wasn't really much conflict in the story.
You mean the wedding wasn't kind of a climactic battle?
Yeah, just run into one guy. The guy Excaliburs and he runs away. That's not a climactic battle. There wasn't really much there. It didn't feel fulfilling in the end. I guess that's the best way that I can put it. And that's the frustrating part. I think if this got a second season, I would definitely jump into it.
Oh, for sure.
Like I said, I think I want some sort, and it's not as if I think I'd watch the second season because I'm so invested in the show. It's more of a thing that I want some payoff, and I think if it went into a second season, we'd start getting that payoff because it would actually get into stuff at that point because, again, most of this felt like an introduction to a bigger story. And I do like the characters. I like the character designs. It's just it didn't really do anything with any of it, unfortunately.
Well, knowing now that this is pretty much all the prologue story, that makes me more excited about a second or third season. Is that knowing now that we're effectively none of the real quote unquote mechanics of the world has been pretty much explored, because it that is a true fact. Is it is kind of frustrating to not really get into a lot of the background stuff, like the spirit stuff. Me and Andrew kind of bantered back and forth about whether or not Haruto had was the spirit, or if there was another spirit inside of him. That was a kind of an interesting thing that we kind of talked about for a little bit. It when it all comes down to it, there's a lot of interesting stuff in this world. That is kind of the main reason why I'm so intrigued by this world. And if this is just the prologue, then the second season and possibly even the third season could definitely dig into a lot of the stuff that we're really kind of curious about. So yeah, I would love to see more of it.
So yeah, my nutshell, I can't suggest it unless it gets a second season. I can't suggest it just because of how much of a source material bait it is. That stuff is kind of pretty much Andrew no-no number one. If you see a second season announced, if you're into harem power fantasies, check it out. Because that's literally what it is. It's a harem power fantasy. He's literally getting overpowered every 2 seconds. There's no real... nothing he faces gives him any kind of difficulty. Everybody's shocked by how overpowered he is. Everything that shouldn't be possible by a person, he's able to do. And yeah, he makes a bunch of harem members cry. And they're all cute. So that's kind of where I kind of leave it at. Is if it gets second season, maybe if you like those aspects. If it doesn't get a second season, I can't suggest it just because of its way too heavy of a source material bait, unfortunately. But yeah.
I'm mixed. I'm a little bit mixed on the ending. But when it comes down to it, I thought it was a fun show. Just I think that ending is very frustrating.
Yeah. So yeah, let's say it again, Silky Spirit Chronicles. Check that out if that sounds interesting to you. The case study, Vanitas, or Vanitas No Carte, streaming on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes. It already has a second season that was announced right off the bat when they were first adapting it. That will be starting in January 2022. The studio is Bones. The source is a manga. The genres are historical, supernatural, vampire, fantasy, and shonen. The director on this one is Tomoyuki Itomura, who did the Monogatari series. Series composition was by Hitomi Mueno, who did, of course, Snow White with Red Hair, A Manchu Flying Witch, Noragami, and many others. Creator is Jun Mochizuki, who did Pandora Hearts, and the music was done by Yuki Kajiura, who did the Type Moon series, specifically the Fate series music, so fantastic people working behind this. But yeah, this takes place in the 19th century Paris. It's kind of like an alternative world, obviously, because there's vampires in it, but they kind of talk about in the past that there was a war between humans and vampires, and it seems like the humans won, because the vampires live in kind of like an alternate Paris that's beyond this barrier. But there are still some vampires that live amongst humans, and it's very frowned upon if a vampire does attack a human. They're kind of often seen as curse bearers if they can't control their vampiric desires, essentially, because there's this kind of ability that some people can essentially affect the true name of a vampire, cause them to become a curse bearer, they lose control themselves, and they can attack indiscriminately. And if they become a curse bearer, they're pretty much executed at that point because they are doing the one thing that you're not supposed to do. They're going to cause a war again, basically, so that's not allowed. And the idea of the curse bearer came in effect because at some point in the past, there's kind of this story being told that there is this vampire that was born under the blue moon, and this vampire was known as Vanitas. And they didn't like him because most vampires are born under the crimson moon. So they kind of outed him and exiled him. And in like this kind of state of revenge, like, I'm going to get back at you people, he creates this book. And this grimoire essentially has the ability to essentially see the true name of a vampire, in which point he can corrupt that name and make them a curse bearer. Well, cut to the current time. We have a guy named Noe who is essentially about to be attacked by one of these curse bearers. And this guy shows up out of nowhere. This human shows up out of nowhere and starts to fight the vampire off, and then uses the book, uses the name of Vanitas to essentially correct the curse bearer's true name and cures her, makes her back to normal. Like, she's now a normal vampire. She's not attacking anybody. So it's a little bit of weird, like this guy that's taken upon himself the name of Vanitas, this cursed, this exiled vampire that claims that he was going to curse all the vampires, but now he's helping the vampires. So that's basically the opening of it. And you essentially have this human Vanitas carrying the grimoire of Vanitas and the name, traveling around with Noe, who is a vampire, as they sort of find curse bearers and, you know, basically cure their true name, make them better, and then look at, like, the basically who is causing the curse bearers and the story behind that. It gets a little bit into the politics between the humans and the vampires, different leaderships, who's possibly working behind the scenes to cause the curse bearers, and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. And you didn't get, did you get back on this, or did you even start it?
I got through the first episode, that was it.
Oh. Yeah, this show is fantastic. This is definitely a show that I can see possibly being a Anime of the Year contender. It's just everything about it really worked for me. I think one of the greatest things that kind of creates that, I guess, that enjoyment that I had so much in it was just it has kind of a, like a buddy cop drama sort of feel of it. Like, you have Vanitas and Noe are working side by side, but they're always like at odds with each other, which creates this like really fun chemistry between the two of them. Cause Noe is kind of like he's kind of a little bit oblivious as to people. Like, he's the one that thinks that, well, if they're attacking us, let's try to work with them. We could possibly find a medium. And Vanitas is over here going, dude, they literally want to kill us. We have to do something. If we have to play dirty, we have to beat them because they don't want to be our friends. And having that kind of chemistry between the two of them and how they treat each situation was like this pure joy in every little scene that they had. You see them at each other's throats, but yet they're always working with each other. Vanitas obviously finds Noe fascinating and wants to use his strength, whereas Noe is supposedly having to, was told by his teacher to basically observe the grimoire. Like, he was supposed to find, observe the grimoire, not necessarily take the grimoire, but observe it. So he's always kind of watching Vanitas to see what he's doing with the grimoire. It's also a really fascinating world. I'm not a really huge fan of vampire shows or vampire stories in general. But the concept of the true names and stuff like that is interesting to me. So I did like that aspect of it. It also had kind of a, you know how different vampire stories kind of tell the vampire aspect, the sucking the blood a little bit differently. Some kind of turn it into this thing of like a, it causes pleasure even though it's killing the person, that kind of stuff. It kind of gets in that realm. Like, it's more of that aspect of it's being like a sensual thing. But it was kind of interesting how they portrayed that. And there's some, like, Noe apparently has the ability to see into somebody's memories if he drinks their blood. So that it kind of adds some more interesting elements to the blood drinking process. But yeah, getting into each of the characters' stories, a lot of the characters are fantastic. Jean was fantastic. She's technically the the saber type character, super strong, but gets like thrown off her balance by Vanitas's flirting and stuff like that. Domi was fantastic. She's kind of from she's from Noe's past, which they have like a really terrible past together with some, it was a very violent episode. I'll just say that.
Was that the one that you scared me away from the show with?
Probably. It was one of those episodes where it opens up with a content warning, and that's always kind of like, oh yeah, whatever. Oh, never mind. That was pretty violent. It doesn't really drag it out, but it was pretty violent. But yeah, just I think everything about this show, the setting, the aesthetic, the characters, just the chemistry is fantastic. Characters that I thought that I wouldn't like there's a character, Roland, who works for the church, essentially. He's like a paladin. And I thought that he was going to be like the, oh, church evil bad kind of guy, you know. But there's like so many facets to him as a character. By the end of it, I was just like, I love this character. Like, this character is fantastic. It's just the way that it produces characters, the way that it builds characters, the chemistry between each of the characters, the aesthetic, everything is pretty much perfect with this show. And Bones just goes crazy every now and then with some action scenes. It's not an action-heavy show, but when it does action, it's just fantastic. Bones just pulls out all the stops. There's everything about this show is just, it's great. I cannot say enough. Like I said, this is going to be probably an anime of the year contender. I cannot wait for the second season, because at the very last episode, at the very end, they reveal the character. They source material baited me. Oh, never mind. It's got a second season coming. But the character they revealed, she said like two lines, Ryu Kajimiya. I'm like, yes.
Oh, yeah?
Can you make, now all I gotta do is put a Kendra Suda character in here and an Aoyuki character, and I'm completely on board, 100%. But yeah, and it's funny because it does make sense that you have like a person like Hitomi Moino working on this, because I get such like Noragami vibes from how they talk and everything, and so it makes perfect sense that Moino is actually working on this. Because I think like the dialogue and the back and forth is just absolutely perfect. Yeah, I'm just going to keep gushing. So I'm just going to say, watch this show. I think it's phenomenal. Like I said, everything about it is just fantastic. And I cannot wait for more of it. Good backstories to the characters, too. There's still plenty to get into with Vanitas. And I'm guessing that's probably going to be something they'll get into. It's so funny because I thought that they got into everything they were going to get into with Vanitas. But technically, there's kind of a period of time in his history that we haven't seen yet, because at some point Noe is talking about wanting to drink his blood, and he's like, if you ever do that, I'll kill you. And I'm like, okay, apparently we still have some stuff to get into with Vanitas that he does not want people to know. So that's good. That's awesome. But now, Case Study Vanitas, absolutely fantastic. Like I said, I don't usually like vampire shows, but this one just got me. Love it to death. Cannot wait for more of it. So definitely a recommendation for me, and I cannot wait for the second season. So yeah, it's the Case Study of Vanitas. Check that out. Tsukimichi Moonlit Fantasy, or Tsuki ga Michibiku Isekai Doshu. This one is streaming on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes. They already have a second season announced, which is great. Studio is C2C, source is a light novel. Genres are adventure, comedy, fantasy. And the series composition and script was done by Kenta Ihara, who did Saga Tanya Evil, Cautious Hero, and Full Dive. And this one follows a guy named Makoto. And Makoto, at some point, kind of, he jokes about, in the very beginning, about how everybody that he gets isekai gets, like, this great other world they go to. They're super powerful. They get a beautiful harem. All this great stuff. But he is apparently the most... He claims, he's self-proclaimed that he is the worst luck isekai ever. I highly disagree, but we'll go with it. But now it basically opens up where he goes to sleep one night, and then he just wakes up in front of Tsukuyomi. And Tsukuyomi's like, hey, by the way, there's all these different worlds. There's gods and goddesses that head each of these worlds. And every now and then, we kind of trade people. We'll send people from our world to another world. They'll get superpowers and be the hero of that world. And since your parents were actually isekai'd into the human world, like our world, part of that contract was that we were going to send one of their offspring to back to the other world. So to fulfill that contract, you have to go back to this other world. Now, the problem is this goddess of this world's kind of mean, so just be aware of that. And so he gets sent to this other world where this goddess, before the goddess, and the goddess basically goes, oh my gosh, you're butt ugly. You go down to my world, but go all the way to the edge of the world. Stay away from my humans. Don't spread your seed. I don't want you're ugly in my world. And so he basically is sent down into this world, often like the edge of it where there's just nothing but demi-humans. And that's where he lives pretty much for a while as he meets other demi-humans, learns about the world itself, and eventually basically becomes one of the demi-humans. Like he kind of eventually at some point finds human civilizations, and there's just nothing but gorgeous people. And he can't even show his face because they'll see him as a demi-human because he's that ugly. Plus he has a kind of a demonic aura about him because his power is so high. But yeah, basically trying to live in this isekai world, but as not the hero. Like there is other, like the goddess has chosen somebody else to be the hero of the isekai. He's just kind of an outcast, but he's still powerful in the end. So he ends up, you know, beating and befriending this girl named Tomoe. And Tomoe ends up having a demi-plane within herself where he starts to build a civilization of demi-humans and eventually kind of learns the nastiness of the humans of this world and just how much he's going to be at odds with the goddess herself. So your thoughts on Tsukimichi?
I really like this show. They do some really fascinating things. And I was trying to explain this a little bit on one of the my live streams as somebody had asked me about it. This one is an odd one in the fact that I love the fact that this character is effectively, I don't want to say an anti-hero, but he in effect is. He is the opposite of the hero in which he's technically going against quote unquote good. I know that they've kind of flipped the entire thing on its head by making the goddess this high and mighty, effectively villainous of this world, but technically she is the goddess and her world is set up this way. So it's a really interesting vibe to have effectively built in this world. The demi-humans are technically very humanized. They're really technically all good guys. Him being a part of this group really changes the entire dynamic of how this story is moves forward into later parts, especially with heroes doing certain things technically against his group, which by all accounts would be considered okay. And that's the strange thing about this entire system and how they've set this world up. So I highly suggest it. I think it's a very fascinating take on the isekai genre, and I love it.
Yeah, he's pretty much painted as the bad guy of the world. And that's what's really kind of what grabbed me was having that aspect of, I think at the point that he first sees a human civilization, and again, they pretty much seen him as like some demon lord that was coming towards them and started firing at him. Obviously, he couldn't understand the language because she didn't really give him enough knowledge of how to learn languages, or at least a knowledge early on. I think she just gives him the knowledge of demi-human language. And it kind of paints this picture really early on that, okay, so he's technically the bad guy. And it never really has this point in which he's doing something necessarily for the humans, which in this world, again, like you said, is the good guys. It, what this goddess has created is this world of perfect human beings have the blessing of the goddess, and everybody else doesn't. I think, like, in the second episode or something like that, he ends up welcoming in the dwarves. And the dwarves were asking him, well, you're a hero that was blessed by the goddess, right? And he's like, don't even connect me to her. I hate her. And he's like, oh, okay, well, good. Because we don't agree with the goddess either. And at that point, it's establishing this idea that even the people that he's bringing in are now acknowledging that he is not blessed by the goddess, and thus he will not follow what the goddess wants, which is exactly what they don't want, because the world that she created is, you know, beautiful human supremacy. And that's the concept that it's creating in this world. And he's technically going against that and becoming a threat to the goddess in what she's basically creating. And again, like I said, that essentially, no, he's not going around and going out of his way to kill innocent humans, but it is technically creating this concept that he is the villain. Like, in this world, he obviously probably eventually will become known as probably the Demon Lord. Let's no doubt there. But yeah, that concept there was very interesting to me. And it's something that had me really kind of captivated. Also, they kind of play with some weird... It does early on feel like it's just playing jokes and tropes off of the isekai world, but it never really becomes the sum of that. And I think that's a really important thing to establish. This show does make fun of certain isekai features, especially early on. Like, when it first opens up, I'm like, okay, so this show is going to be nothing about anything, but let's make fun of the tropes of isekai. No. Doesn't really do anything. Like I said, it literally opens up saying, hey, I'm like the worst luck to isekai, which again, I completely doubt or disagree with that. But here's all these great things that happens to isekai characters, and nothing none of that happens to me. But it never really plays with it after that. It just does its own thing. And again, like I said, the thing that I think uniquely that it's doing is essentially creating and molding the villain of this world that is essentially trying to do good. Like, he doesn't really want to harm anybody, but as things happen to him and his people, obviously he's going to retaliate. And yes, it technically does get a little dark with that. Surprisingly dark with that. So keep that in mind. But no, it never felt like he was the villain, though. It just feels like he is technically taking care of his people, which are seen in this world as being lesser than, like, lesser things. Like, it doesn't matter. They're just a cockroach. You can switch them. It doesn't matter. But wait, they're his people. That's not a good thing. Other than that, yeah, there's a lot of really cool aspects they kind of introduce in this world. Like, Tomoe has the ability to, like, pull memories out of him. So she becomes, like, this really huge samurai geek. Muyo ends up, you know, doing the same thing. And she likes eating his memories. It gets really weird with those kind of things. Emma is fantastic because she's, like, the cute little, like, orc girl, but she's like super sinister if you like really get into it. This is a lot of fun characters. I absolutely love them. I think the only thing that really frustrated me about the show is at some point Makoto gets like really mean to Tomoe, and I never really understood it. And Tomoe's like pure gold. I love Tomoe so much. And that's the funny thing is, like, early on when I first started watching the show, I didn't like the character designs at all. But then, like, just because they're good characters, I fell in love with them. Like, I didn't like Tomoe's character design. But then at some point, I'm like, I really love this character. She's so cool. Mio, like, I don't think Mio was ever really supposed to be, like, an off-putting character because she was more molding herself to his memories. So she, like, took on the form of something more beautiful and traditional Japanese, whereas Tomoe is just more just herself, so... Yeah. Really fun characters. Really cool concept. I think the only thing that really kind of... I think the only parts that really kind of become meh for me, like the lulling points of the show, were probably the more, I guess, merchant style stuff. Because at some point he gets interested in not becoming a hero, not becoming a villain or anything like that. He gets interested in just becoming a merchant. Like, if he can trade goods, obviously he has a lot of resources in this demiplane that he wants to utilize to make money and to basically use to help his demiplane. He starts getting into trading a lot of the rare resources that are being developed inside of this demiplane. And there's some of that aspects, I think more of the, I guess, the bargaining and stuff like that, that were kind of the lulling point for me. But other than that, like, the concept of building the illusory world that he's going to have where people come to find those goods, that stuff was interesting to me, and how that kind of leads into a huge conflict later on was really fantastic. So just really good storytelling, great characters. It's one of the few isekais that I'm like, this one's just doing everything right. And I'm really enjoying it. So this is another one where I'm really thankful that it's got a second season coming already. Because if you asked me like 3 weeks ago, I'd probably say, nah, this will never get a sequel. But no, it's getting a sequel. So obviously it's doing well probably in Japan. That's fantastic because this is definitely one that I'm happy to get a sequel. There's other ones that I'm not too happy about, but this one's definitely one that I'm happy about getting a sequel. So I'm looking forward to it. Plus, it's got Kendra Suda. Kendra Suda just comes in like right towards the later part of it. Mm-hmm. So that's a good thing. I'm always happy to form a Kendra Suda. So, but yeah, that's Tsukimichi Moonlit Fantasy. Definitely a fantastic isekai doing some interesting new things. To Your Eternity, or Fumetsu no Anata E. This one was streaming on Crunchyroll and for 20 episodes. Ended like sometime in the middle of the season, so hopefully I can remember everything. If not, I have a video review that I did shortly after I finished it, so if I'm missing anything, it'll be there. The source is a manga. The genres are adventure, supernatural, drama, and shonen. And this one was, done by Yoshitoki Oima, who did A Silent Voice. Yes, I do have to mention Kenjo Suda is also in this show. He's the beholder. But yeah, this essentially opens up with this being that's narrating the fact that it's going to place this orb upon our world. It seems like our world. He's placing this orb upon a world. And this orb, when it's kind of stimulated by something, certain things, it will then basically mimic it. So really early on, when he first places it down, it touches a rock, it becomes a rock. A wolf comes by and dies upon the top of it, and it ends up turning into that wolf, and then so on and so forth. And we end up finding out shortly later is that it seems like this being, which we call the Beholder, this Beholder that's narrating this being that he placed upon this world, wants this being to essentially absorb the knowledge of this world, like to become like an archive, I guess. As it travels around and meets different people, it's kind of consuming knowledge of this world because eventually this world's going to come to an end. It possibly will come to an end. So it basically follows this Beholder follows this being as it walks around and travels around and meets different cultures, different people, and then ends up kind of consuming the knowledge of that world, learning about humans, learning about human nature, learning about tribes, learning about different aspects of different cultures, and eventually helping it grow and grow as it's always kind of being pursued by this creature that they call the Knockers that essentially will try to steal these precious memories from this being. Every time that it's kind of punctured, it'll draw those memories out of this being. Later on, it's end up, somebody calls this being Fushi. So let's get that out of the way because it's very difficult to explain this without having a name to it. But yeah, this being that's placed upon this world is called Fushi. And Fushi will travel around and meet different people and kind of consume the memories that they're kind of providing him. So, yeah. So, a little bit of a backstory for me. Obviously, I read A Silent Voice. I absolutely loved it. And then when that same writer ended up making another story, which was To Your Eternity, I jumped into it. It was on Crunchyroll's manga thing, so I started reading it. Was really enjoying it. At some point in the fourth or so arc, in this particular adaptation, it was like the last arc before this last episode. At some point when I got to that arc in the manga, I fell away from the manga. Like, I was really not liking that arc. And so when they said they were adapting it, I'm like, okay, cool. This is sweet. Brainspace is doing it. Brainspace can do some really awesome stuff. First couple episodes looked really incredible. A lot of the more emotional points of this manga were just being perfectly adapted. Brainspace was going just out of their way to make it perfectly adapted in both visual, spectacle, animation, music. Everything was just perfect. I'm like, wow, this could re-spark my love for this manga. And then the animation got to that arc, and it didn't help it. So it's like one of those things where I love this show, and I think they did an absolutely fantastic job of adapting it. Like I said, a lot of the emotional points of the story were just phenomenal. And then the problem is that in the second core of this adaptation, when it gets to this island arc, it's not the fault of Brainspace or the anime adaptation of this. It's just that this is like, it's not a very good story arc. It's a very boring story arc that doesn't really do anything but create some frustrations because they essentially introduce a quote-unquote villain character in this world, besides the Knockers, and it's just not a very interesting villain. And they explain a little bit by why that person is the way they are. It's just not a very interesting villain. And it kind of frustrates me. But even still, even that last episode, they kind of introduced this another element to the story. So it has me excited for a second season because obviously I have not read the manga beyond that point. So I'll be getting into fresh stuff coming into fall of 2022 when they have a second season. And I'm super excited for that because everything around it, it's still fantastic. It still has fantastic characters. It has so many extremely emotional points in the story. All these people that Fushi ends up meeting have these really great stories that it doesn't take very long, but it's almost like they do a really good job of like drawing you into the characters and then having some sort of aspect within their life that affects Fushi in some way to teach him something. It teaches him love in certain characters that he ends up meeting, teach him about family. So him being this foreign being, that's pretty apparent. Like as you see him walk around certain people, he doesn't really walk like whatever creature that he is mimicking. And so he looks very alien in nature, but he's slowly learning how to be human and walk amongst the humans more naturally. And it's cool seeing that progression. It's something that I see in the manga, obviously. The manga did portray this aspect of, well, he looks kind of creepy. How can he walk amongst people and not think that he's just a total monster? Him learning how to more naturally hang around them, learning about mannerisms, and learning about how to interact with other people. And then again, learning these certain facets about human nature that eventually mold him into something. He has points where he realizes that humans are nasty people and he doesn't really want to be around them. And there's other times where he realizes that he just either he's afraid of being around humans because he'll cause them harm because he's experienced loss. Or you'll have times where he realizes he can't be away from humans. Like he desires the companionship of humans because of all the experiences that he's had. And it's all these aspects that really makes it a really interesting story that just really kind of hit heavy on human nature, which I think the writer is really good at. I have to warn, and I think it is natural that this writer just had a really bad point. And it's in her storytelling at this point in this island arc was like this point where they kind of lost their edge for a little bit. And so I'm really excited to see how they can kind of pull it back around to something really interesting as it gets into the second season, because that's really what I'm looking forward to kind of re-spark my love for this writer and this particular story. So I will also admit that along with that failure of an arc, it did seem like Brainspace was losing a little bit of their quality during that time. And I can kind of, that's typically something that happens with a lot of anime adaptations when they get later in the story, either time restraints or budget kind of starts dwindling. But it's kind of a similar case with this one. When they got into that later arc, which didn't really help the arc too much because I was already not liking the arc, it seemed like a lot of the animation just started to kind of whittle off. A lot of the action scenes just became stills sliding across the screen, which was kind of unfortunate because, like I said, early on, a lot of the scenes were just these brilliantly animated scenes that were just captivating me with the both the emotion and what was happening on the screen with some incredible animations. I mean, we had a gigantic bear creature in this animation, and none of it was CGI. And we all know there's a lot of studios that really struggle with big bears. And this was a huge bear, and the fact that they animated it and didn't make it CGI is huge. And they had a wolf, which a lot of animes don't like to animate wolves too. So give Brainspace a lot of credit for that, even though, like I said, later on, it seemed like they started having some issues with animation. But yeah, just like I said, a lot of really powerful emotional moments, a lot of the stories that it tells. Perona was fantastic. I love her to death. And yeah, I can't wait for more. It's a really good story. So, really cool mechanics in the world itself, too. Like I said, the fight between him and the knockers is kind of creates an interesting aspect. Like I said before, technically, when the knockers pierce him, it's like it's drawing out memories. And the whole idea of what Fushi's doing is absorbing memories. So he's going around, he's experiencing all this stuff. And so when the knockers remove one of these memories from him, it's almost like he loses a part of himself. And then he realizes how important that part of himself that he just experienced was, because he realizes he lost it. And it creates this element of the fear of losing these memories that you have of people that you've experienced. And when it gets in that kind of stuff, like I said, additionally, with this aspect of this alien creature learning to be more human and learning the terrible things of humans plus the good things of humans, is definitely, like I said, I think that's where Oima Yoshitoki really does shine. So, yeah. To Your Eternity, definitely check that out if that's interesting to you. Definitely. Besides that last arc, was really phenomenal. So, man, we had a double whammy. Going right into Kageki Shoujo. Kageki Shoujo is our next show. This was done by Funimation, or not done by Funimation. So this is streaming on Funimation, ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio Pine Jam. The source is a manga. Genres are drama, school, shoujo. And the director was Kazuhiro Yoneda, who did Yona the Dawn and Gleppner. And this one takes place in the Koka Revue School. It basically talks about how there was this Koka Revue that was founded in the Taisho era. Later on, they essentially established a school to train these up-and-coming actresses. For those who don't know, the Revue is typically where you have an all-girls cast that will perform a stage play, and they will obviously play the roles of the male and the female characters in the story. But apparently, way long after this, the 100th year of this particular school is going to be starting, and it seems like the actual school itself, the faculty, have decided that they're just going to kind of go out of the norms. So they're allowing a lot of students to apply and join in that normally they wouldn't really do. And it's almost like they're trying to experiment with this particular year of this particular Koka. And such characters are Sarasa Watanabe, who is a very tall girl that is seeking to play female roles, which, again, is not a really normal thing that they would allow. Usually the female roles obviously would be more shorter than the male roles. So if she's really tall, they're going to want her to play male roles. So again, trying to do some little different things this year. Ai Narita is another girl, she has a problem around men. You'll find out later why that is, but she really doesn't like being around men. So she decides to apply so that she can be in an all-girls school, which is obviously why you want to apply for the school. And several other girls all join this 100th class, and they're all learning how to do this particular stage play, and obviously the issues that come with that. The issues being things like, you know, technically there's only 4 seasons of casting for these stage plays, so every role, you'll only have about 4 openings to it, so it's a very competitive industry. Also, there's a lot of restrictions, there's a lot of expectations in these girls that obviously causes a lot of stress, being that it's a very female heavy audience. They're very scrutinizing and very attentive to details, so you know, body shape, all that kind of stuff are very scrutinized. So there's a lot of drama, a lot of heavy emphasis on certain things that often creates a lot of stress in these girls, plus a lot of the competitiveness between each class. Obviously the second years don't really want the first years to succeed because they're looking for these roles as well. So all these things kind of play out that again create a lot of struggle for the girls as they apply and learn more about the stage play. So your thoughts on Kageki Shoujo?
There's a whole bunch of interesting things about this show that are just make this show work so well. Number one, looks great to me. The storyline is absolutely fantastic, well-paced, a lot of great drama moments. It loves to kind of work on each one of these characters individually. It gives each one of these characters time to breathe. So you're at no point do you really kind of feel rushed as you're going through any of these girl stories. So it does really well on the drama points and the storyline in general. I do really like Sarasa in particular. Ai is to me is well done as well. But in particular, Sarasa having this kind of drive to go for the female role, as Andrew was mentioning, when technically she has literally everything going against her. She is a great, she's great as a quote unquote actress because technically she has acting in her past.
She was trying to be kabuki.
Kabuki. So it's literally the exact opposite of what she's going for, where she's trying to take this going into this type of theater, which is all female casts. She came from a family who was in from a past that has an all-male role. So she literally has everything that is the exact opposite of what she's going for. I like that kind of contrast of past versus the future. So she's literally doing a whole bunch of growth as she's going through all of this. It's a real neat thing that is kind of tossed in there. I has some really, really kind of dark stuff going on in her past and how she has to deal with all of that. And I don't want to get too much into that, but that story is well done. We get into the twins at some point and their kind of sibling rivalry, which was, I thought was well done.
I wouldn't call it a sibling rivalry. It's more of a thing of a forking of dreams. I think it's best way to put them.
But I really like a lot of the stuff that is done in this story. And I thought it was really well done.
Yeah, I definitely agree. This is another anime of the year contender for me. I'm super heartbroken because it seems like this is not going to get a second season. And this so needs a second season. In a season where we have pretty much 9 to 10 shows, I think, were announced to have sequels already at the announcement of their final episode. This is one where I was like, please, somebody, please just say that this is getting a sequel because I want to see more of this. Yeah, just fantastic characters. Everything about this show is just absolutely perfectly portrayed. And it's so funny because early on when it was first kind of introduced, I'm like, I'm not liking the character designs. I'm not really liking the style of it. Narita is really annoying. All these things were playing out. But as I watched it, I'm like, oh, wow. It's like telling these stories so well. Narita's past was really screwed up. I understood they were going to tell me a screwed up past that was going to eventually explain why she is the way she is. I still didn't like her, like, right off the bat, even though it told me why she is the way she was. It kind of slowly made me fall in love with her because of the way that she acts. She had a change in herself, mainly because of Sarasa, but her own desires to change herself is what eventually led me to go, wow, yeah, you can have these, you know, terrible first impressions of somebody, but eventually you can grow to, you know, wanting to encourage them and want them to go on to be successful. Yeah, Sarasa's story is fantastic. I liked her really off the bat because because she was like the character that's always told no. And then she's eventually like, no, I've been told no enough. I'm going to do this. Like, this is something that I want to do because my entire life I've been told no. And I've had my dreams shattered because people didn't want to allow me to do what I wanted to do. And I'm not going to have that happen again with this particular case. There's so many great facets in this story. I like how whenever it tells certain heavy subjects, it's very respectful of it. Again, going into Inarita's history, when it told that story, it wasn't necessarily graphic. It's just one of those aspects of you understood why, as a young child, she would have been affected that way because it's essentially the same thing. Like, what she experienced was as bad as we thought it was going to be because of her childlike mind thinking this was what happened to her. And that effect on her and how they played out that story was fantastic. It made perfect sense why that affected her the way that it affected her. It wasn't just a trope. This wasn't a trope character. This wasn't a manphobia character to be manphobia. It was a character that went through something that affected her, and the way that it told it was both respectful and really well done. And that similarly happens with other characters as they face certain things. They get into purging. And when they get into the purging aspect, again, they played out very respectfully and showing that the faculty themselves are not stupid, that they've seen this stuff happen to these girls before. They know that this stuff is so competitive. They know these girls will get to the point where they're so wrapped up in the competition and the difficulties that they'll end up facing will affect them emotionally and physically. And so they don't really know how to handle it, but they will handle it in the way that they see that it's deemed to be handled. And I think that was really well done. Just every way, every character was fantastic. I love the backstories, like you mentioned. I love the Sawada twins, their story basically telling this idea of forking dreams, getting into Hoshino and this really cute little crush that she had in the past, all these stage plays, how they find inspiration for their roles was fantastic. Seeing that they're obviously going to be facing struggles with, you know, producing good results, even though they think that they're good at what they do. Having those points which they realize that they've failed, that they need to grow more, all those things were really well done. Hijiri, don't like her. Hijiri was like the only character I didn't like, but obviously they have to have somebody under that that's tossing dirt at people's eyes. They have to have somebody be the bully. but other than her, I loved everybody else. A lot of the current, when they get into a lot of the current actors that are currently in the seasons, a lot of their, I guess their inspiration that they can give to the students was really fantastic. I loved a lot of the interactions they had as well. Just everything's fantastic. This is a story that's obviously digging into something that you don't really find in a lot of, I mean, yes, it is a school show, but it's diving into the revue stage play stuff. And it's something that I was definitely looking forward to when I seen it, because we've seen Revue Starlight and stuff like that, where it was more fantastical version of it. So when they announced this, I was more excited for it because I wanted to get into the revue aspect because I've never really seen it. And I was definitely interested because they actually got a lot into Kabuki as well, which I'm always kind of interested in as well. And drawing those parallels between getting a little bit into Kabuki, getting heavy deep into revue, how these students are basically raised up, how they face the struggles that they face, which are obviously things that we would assume is going to happen. Like, again, like I said, aspect of body issues that they are obviously going to be very stressed out about. Getting to a lot of that stuff is really great, and it told the story fantastic. I loved all the stories they end up getting to with each of the characters. Everything just kind of played out perfect. There wasn't a single episode that I wasn't really kind of invested in, and all the stories they told were fantastic. And every time an episode ended, I was just upset because I wanted more. So I cannot wait for more. I hope this is kind of one of those ones where, and this is, I think, a really strong statement that I can make for the show. This is one of those ones where if I don't see a second season soon announced, I'll probably get into the manga. And I don't really say that often, so that's saying something there. So I hope we get more, though.
I can agree.
Definitely fantastic. Kageki Shoujo, or Opera Girl. I thought they were going to have the English title Opera Girl, but apparently Kageki Shoujo is the English title as well, so definitely a suggestion from me. Highly recommend it. Go check it out. Girlfriend, Girlfriend is our next one. Kanojo Mo Kanojo. This one streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes. The studio is Tezuka Productions. The source is a manga. The genres are harem, comedy, romance, school, shonen. And this one follows a guy named Naoya. And as it opens up, Naoya has finally gotten the girl of his dreams to accept his love, Saki. After confessing to her for like months and months and months and months and months, she finally has accepted his love and they are now dating. And as, you know, they're enjoying their time together, eventually Naoya is asked to go to the roof by a girl named Nagisa, at which point Nagisa, this other girl, decides to confess that she loves him and wants to, you know, date him as well. And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, I have a girlfriend now, I can't accept your love. And then she proceeds to explain how essentially she was away from school for a long time just so that she can practice every single day to become the perfect girlfriend just to ask him out on a date. And so knowing this, he's like, crap, I can't say no now. I have the perfect solution. Let's go talk to Saki and see if she's okay with me dating both of you, because I'm not going to cheat on Saki, but I will go out with both of you if she's okay with it. So yeah, they proceed to essentially try to explain to Saki that he is going to, you know, do everything he can to make both of the girls happy and hoping that she will accept the two of them. And at first she's like, you know, Nagisa's great. She thinks she's adorable and loves the food that she makes. But now that he's like, you know, I want to go out with both of you, it's kind of throwing a huge issue in her because she's like, wait, we're going out. You can't go out with another girl. So yeah, thus begins this hot mess of a show. Your thoughts?
I absolutely love this show. It is, it hits every spot for me as far as the harem, the comedy aspect, the goofy setup that they've got here.
But there's no loli character. What are you talking about? That's not every asset. What are you talking about, Chris?
Because everybody knows that I go for harems for lollies.
It has to have a loli character.
One of the absolute best things about this, strangely enough, I have a real hard time with Dithers and, or kind of the main character, whatever you want to call him.
Protagonist.
The protagonist. The fascinating thing about Naoya, while he is annoying as all get out, his honest nature absolutely drives the way this story, works. The cool thing about, Nagisa and Saki, that as kind of a setup for this kind of system that they've got going on here, really is just well done. I and adding the kind of quote unquote other love interests that they do later on, That all works together really well, and it just drives the comedy that's going on. We've got, in a lot of cases, Saki is just the straight man in this situation. Why are you doing this? This is not right. This is and but at the same time, she's adding to her own humor as far as everything is concerned. So I love the way this is all well done and I highly, if you like harems, if you like. If you'd like a refreshing take on the harems, if you'd like a little bit of ecchi here and there, this show's got all those in spades. It's well done. I love it.
Yeah, I'm kind of on the same mind. Pretty much a lot of the humor is really around Naoya's, like, just truthfulness. He's like, he has no filters. Like, he just says what he thinks. And it's like one of those things where, at first, I really hated Naoya because he's annoying. He's very annoying. He's very stupid. But at the same time, I respect him a lot because he's honest. He never lies. Granted, again, as a joke, is, well, you're two-timing. How can you be an honest person? But he's truthful about it. He's not, you know, dating Nagisa behind Saki's back. He's very truthful. He's like, this is what I want to do. I will do everything I can in order to make it happen. Please let me do this. So he's very honest, and I do respect that he's super honest and that he's respectful of the people around him because he's honest with what he wants. But at the same time, he has no filters, and so he'll say the stupidest things because he's being very, you know, brutally honest. And yeah, the pillars of the story really is Naoya, his honesty to his own detriment, Saki, her being the straight man to respond to how absurd his requests are, and then Nagisa, who essentially is the one that's facilitating these requests by Naoya because she's so perfect. And that definitely creates this like little three-pillar system that really creates a lot of absurdity and humor that's in the show. So it is, yeah, I agree that it's very much a refreshing take on the harem. I kind of mentioned in my video, I'm like, you know, when we all think that we've seen everything in harems, here comes Girlfriend, Girlfriend is technically taking a very interesting and unique direction for the idea of a harem show. It's not a Ditherer character. Honestly, he's the opposite of Ditherer. He says what he wants and he always says it. He never really has any filters. I think the only thing that really kind of gives me pause and hesitation when I talk about the show is really that I feel like a lot of the comedy just peters off. Like, this writer is really great at creating scenarios. Like, he'll create a scenario that is absolutely absurd or really funny or just a hot mess. And then what happens is he'll take that scenario and he'll play it out for too long. And so it's like he creates the horse, he hits the horse, you laugh, and the horse is sitting there as a dead horse and he keeps hitting it. And he goes, is it still funny? And that's what I found with a lot of the skits is I would find, and it really wasn't really many skits that I really didn't have this feeling of. It's like he would introduce a skit, he'd play it out, and he played out too long every single time. And so what I found myself is every time one of these skits would be starting to get that point where I'm like, okay, you've done it. The horse is dead. I would have an urge to skip forward. Like, okay, let's get to the next joke. Because obviously, every time, without fail, he will get this joke and he will just play it out for far too long. So that's my only issue that I have with the show, is it creates really hilarious scenarios. It creates scenarios that are absolutely absurd, and I love it for that. But he just plays out the jokes for too long that I find myself kind of like, please, just go to the next joke. Just please go to the next joke. Characters are great, though. I love a lot of the characters. Saki just makes this show. Let's be honest. Like I said, Naoya's truthfulness and to his own detriment is funny, but it's always Saki and how she responds to everything. That's always, she is probably the, if I were ever to, you know, give an example to somebody about a straight man character, Saki is the pinnacle example of that. She is so good at it, and I think a lot of it has to do with her seiyu pulls off that so much. Like, every time she's just like, what the heck is going on, I'm like, Saki, you're great. Like, that your seiyu is just so perfect at this. So I did also like the idea that at some point when they do kind of get tiresome of the idea of the three-way relationship, it was so great to have. I was expecting that when they were to introduce a next character, it would be immediately, okay, now we have a four-way relationship. I like the fact that the writer, again, chose to kind of take a different route with the third girl, essentially, and it definitely injected a really good chemistry into it. I think if the writer were just to go, okay, now it's three girls, it would really ruin the comedy. But instead, he took it in a different direction, which I did also really like. And even the fourth girl, does her own thing. And the idea of pointing out how literally, legally, it's impossible. And he's like, oh, really? It's like, dude, you haven't thought of this stuff? She's like quoting like laws and stuff. And he's like, I didn't know that. Crap. I should write that down. It's really great. So
I kind of agree with you on the whole jokes kind of overstaying their welcome. It's one of those things that the balance on those are so the fine line is just right there. I think that really when I'm pointing out that they're absolutely hilarious moments. And like Andrew was saying, yeah, it just feels like you get to a point where you're like, okay, this is absolutely funny. And then all of a sudden you realize that, oh, hey, we're about a minute too long and I want to move on to the next thing. And then, next thing is just absolutely hilarious. And then all of a sudden you're like, okay, because I think that an excellent example of this is when, like Andrew was mentioning, the third girl and her introduction into the quote unquote harem, she's doing something that to impede her will into this harem. And to do that, they go through an entire process that literally takes up almost an entire episode. Mm-hmm. Now, don't get me wrong. There's little tidbits in particular that little jokes all the way through there, but this entire situation takes the course of the entire episode. And that's kind of an over exaggerated example of it. But this is what we're talking about is, yes, this joke is funny, but it goes a little bit too long. Then we get to the next really, really funny joke, and then it goes a little too long. So that's kind of a weird example, but that's the point, is it feels like that. It doesn't take away from these jokes are really, really, really funny, at least to me. So I still really highly suggest it.
Yeah, the usual fine print. Comedy is subjective. Mileage may vary. I think when I mentioned in my review, there was several people that came in and said, yeah, I kind of seen that too, but I found it funny the entire time. So it's like everybody kind of sees it differently. Some people are going to find that I guess the way that they take that joke and go along with it is going to be more funnier for longer than some other people. Another example that comes straight to my mind when you're talking about that was the point in which he was trying to get Saki to come back. It was this whole thing where he's on the porch and he's doing all this stuff. And I found a lot of those points really hilarious. Like I spent my life savings on gotcha rolls and I'm going to roll for you on the gotcha. And I'm sitting there going, but wait, where the hell does he get all this money? Like, who is he killing in the background that he gets all this money for a house? And literally like every two scenes, he's telling somebody that he got his life savings out to pay for something for somebody. Like he did it for Rika. And I'm like, wait, where's all this money coming from? How many skeletons do you have in your closet? It just, yeah, it's like at some point I'm going, okay, scene change, please. But yeah, other than that, it's like a hot mess of a show. That's what I really did love about it. It's literally, when we were talking a while back about how clumsy you are, Miss Ueno, it's a similar idea of this idea. Not that they're similar shows, because Miss Ueno is a teasing girl show that doesn't know how, she just is a girl that doesn't know how to express her love other than to drag this guy into her experiments to try to get in situations with him. But they're similar in the idea that when you're watching it, you're like, this girl is literally a hot mess. And that's literally what this harem is. It's a harem of a hot mess because everything surrounding them is just absurd. And these people need to, you know, just do it already. It's like one of those just do it already kind of moments. But yeah, girlfriend, definitely an interesting take on the harem. So check that out if that sounds interesting to you. The Duke of Death and his maid, another hot mess, maybe, sort of. At least for one character. Shinigami Bokchan to Kuro Maid. This one is streaming on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes. It's already slated for a second season, which is fantastic. Studio is JC Staff. The source is a manga. The genres are comedy, supernatural, drama, romance. The director that worked on this is Yoshiki Yamakawa, who did Be the Beginning, Hatsukoi Limited, and Little Busters. This basically follows a guy named, they basically call him Bokchan or the Duke. And this Duke essentially is the oldest son of a pretty rich, noble family. And at some point, he is cursed by a witch to where he can never feel the touch of another person. And how that translates is that anything that he touches dies. So if he touches a flower, the flower will wilt and die. I think it insinuates at some point he touched an animal and the animal died. So I think they just came to the assumption that he probably is going to kill anybody that he touches. So his mother ends up exiling him to a mansion out in the middle of nowhere. She's still technically taking care of him and funding him, but she basically put him aside so that he can't harm anybody. But at the same time, if he, at some point it kind of establishes that if he can't get rid of this curse, that she's going to have to cut ties with him and allow the younger brother to be the next line of the actual family. So as he's there, he essentially is taken care of by their butler, Rob. And also at some point, this girl named Alice ends up showing up, who he's known from his past. And Alice is seemingly absolutely in love with him. So she constantly on a regular basis teases him, flirts with him, and takes care of him at the same time. Kind of brings him out of his shell early on, because you find out that obviously, being what he is, he's very upset, and it kind of causes him to go in a very dark place. But she kind of drags him out of that and takes care of him. And they kind of seek the cure that he needs, obviously, because it seems like they're in love with each other. Both of them seem to be loving each other. So obviously, they would want to get rid of this curse so they can eventually be together. And yeah. Your thoughts?
I really love this show. The storyline, anyway.
the storyline. Everything else sucks. The comedy sucks. The teasing sucks. The story is cool.
Well, I was meaning more along the lines of the visuals. This is very similar to the vein of the High Score Girl. It looks fine.
Same CGI team.
Yeah,
JC.
It looks fine, but when it comes down to it, it's not an aesthetic that I purposefully will go out of my way for.
I think the only person that looked good was Alice. Like, everybody else
Alice looked
weird.
Fucking wonderful.
Like, even Viola. Viola's, like, super cute and funny, but she just looks weird.
Yeah, it's frustrating because you kind of hope that at some point these guys, the team behind this, will get to a point where a lot of the movement looks so robotic. It's distracting how robotic a lot of this stuff looks. But if you can just let that go and just go with the flow of the story, the story and the comedy, it's absolutely too fun. The story is cutesy. It has this kind of element of a weight that is going along the entire thing, which is, of course, his curse. The introduction of the new characters is generally well done. I can't think of but maybe one or two characters, but they're really side characters, so they really don't serve that much of a consequence.
Walter is annoying. Just say it. Walter's annoying. His second joke is annoying.
When it comes down to it, I do really like the weight and the drama that is set in this show. It still has a solid comedy that keeps it above board as far as its drama level. So it still feels kind of light, even though it does have this dark tone through the entire story. So I really like it. I think it does really well at storytelling. I can't wait to see some more of this, especially with that absolutely adorable ending that they finished it off with.
I'm going to agree with you on the idea of the animation. I'm okay with the CGI team of JC Staff. I think High Score Girl still managed to... I think a lot of with High Score Girl, just it was driven by the characters and the story that it's going to be similar in this situation. Now, saying that, I don't necessarily think that it looks terrible. And I think why I say that, and I pose this as a thing to Chris as well, is that I think if the animation could not do well enough, that a lot of that teasing aspect between the two characters would never work. Like, even though it does look like they're very stiff and they looked weird robotic when they move around, those moments where it kind of, you know, zones in on their interaction between Duke and Alice, it still pulls off emotion and expression, because otherwise those interactions would never work. And it seems like whenever those moments happen where they're really close and they're starting to really have these teasing moments, it still seems like JC Staff's CGI team is still pulling off that feeling and is still pulling off those expressions and they're still pulling off that sense of emotion. So even if, again, everything else outside of that looks kind of stiff and weird, it's still getting the point across when it's necessary.
Yeah, the dancing scene was absolutely fantastic looking. I'm not saying that this show looks absolutely horrid. I just I want I want it to them to get to
I'm
the
just
point
enjoying
where,
the yeah. I'm just enjoying me being able to be okay on animation and you being upset about it. I thought it looked great. No, besides, like, yeah, like I said, like, sometimes Duke kind of looks like he's a stick figure walking around, very bony and stiff. And like I said, some of the character designs being a little bit rough, I think overall it looks great. And especially, like, this everything visually, the cel-shadedness quality that they have in the characters themselves, which I think was kind of there with High Score Girl. But I think they've improved it over time. I think that a lot of the characters, like if you take a screenshot, of course I take a lot of screenshots when I'm doing my videos and stuff. A lot of the screenshots, when you zoom in on them, it doesn't really look like it's CGI. So they're really getting to that point now where they can have like just the outlines being blacked, and which if you think about it from a CGI perspective, having an outline that's black is incredibly interesting. Being able to capture essentially the aesthetic of an anime with CGI, they're doing increasingly well. Like I said, though, it's kind of similar to Polygon Pictures. They still have to work on that stiffness of the characters, and at which point I think they'll get to that point where they're really pulling off that that quality similarity with regular animation. So, yeah.
I want it to be done already. Hurry up. Finish getting better.
And then everything will be CGI. No, I did enjoy the show, though. I think a lot of the interactions between Duke and Alice are absolutely fantastic. I love her, like, over forwardness that just completely throws him off. Similarly, I'm always kind of terrified for her because she gets too dang close, and I'm constantly going, literally all it takes for him is to slightly slip his left leg and you're dead, girl. Please don't get that close to him. But again, that kind of accentuates the obvious nature that Alice loves him to death. You know, not to throw a joke out there, she loves him to death, and she will get that close because she loves him that much, and she wants to express that closeness to him despite having to keep a distance. And I think that's a really fantastic thing, that she's trying to close that gap that obviously everybody else around him creates. So if he meets a friend from his childhood who now knows that he'll obviously kill somebody if he touches them, what does that friend from his childhood do? He keeps his distance. He has his guards basically create that gap. And so I think she's overcompensating whenever she's around him to close that gap, to show him that somebody is willing to be next to him at all times. And I think that's absolutely adorable. Getting into the witches were great. All these characters they've introduced, again, besides Walter, every character they introduce as it goes along were fantastic. They eventually get into the mother and everything like that, which I thought was actually surprisingly well done. It has me kind of, my expectations for that scene were kind of shattered, which I do like. And everything that it has going for it for the next season, I think is going to be fantastic. So everything is kind of lining up for the show, besides, yes, some stiff CGI. Everything else is just working out great. Great interaction, cute moments, some very heartfelt moments. A lot of everything is kind of being put together very perfectly. I kind of equate this to the teasing girl genre, like Nagatoro and Miss Ueno and all those other ones, Teasing Master Takagi-san. But at the same time, I think this has a lot more going for it on the romance side. It's a lot more heavy romance compared to something like Takagi-san, because obviously Takagi-san, they're very young. This is more going for more adult romance between the two of them, and a lot more heavy on the comedy. So I think it balances the romance and the comedy pretty well. And it has everything with the supernatural aspects and the curse and everything that I think was going to be, hopefully, have an interesting conclusion if they get to that with the second season. But definitely looking for that second season. Definitely a great show. Really enjoyed it. So yeah, The Duke of Death and His Maid, definitely a suggestion from me. That's it for that one. Mother Goddess Dormitory. Mother Goddess Dormitory. Can we admit that we watched this show? Can we say that you will never find anywhere else anybody else reviewing this show?
Probably not.
I'm probably my review of it on YouTube is probably the only review you'll find, because I don't think that anybody else is going to review that show. Which sucks, because I was reaching out to High Dive to get something going on with them and could not get anything. So, Mother of Goddess Dormitory review. Let's see if anybody else. There's a Should You Watches that were made way early on. Yeah, I think most of these are just people reacting to the show, not really reviewing it. So, oh, there's one review right there. Okay, so I'm not the only one. There's some other reviews. I guess some other people want to ride that train. Anyways, Mother of the Goddess Dormitory, or Megami Ryu no Ryobokun. This one streamed on High Dive, ran for 10 episodes, done by Studio Asreed. The source is a manga. The genres are comedy, romance, ecchi. And this one follows a boy named Kyoshi. And unfortunately, Kyoshi, right off the bat, as the story opens up, his house, or the place that he's living in, burned down. And his father, like, ditched him. So he's left on the side of the street, starving, no place to stay, no food, nothing. And eventually, this girl named Mineru confronts him and says, "Hey, are you okay?" Takes him back to this dorm where she stays at, feeds him, and then after hearing his plea about the fact that he lost his home, he has no place to stay, he doesn't have any money, she's like, "Well, why don't you just work here as the mother of this dormitory?" And yeah, so basically this dormitory is full of a bunch of college students, and he's the only male in the dorm, but he's essentially become the mother of the dormitory, to basically taking care of cleaning and all that kind of stuff, while essentially trying to gain the trust, or them gain the trust of him, as they stay and live in the same place, because obviously a bunch of girls and one boy create some interesting scenarios in a harem anime show.
As your thoughts? Dote and flirt and tease and
yeah.
I like this show. It is absolutely goofy. A lot of the weird situations that they go along. It's they throw all the ecchi things at this poor kid that they can. I absolutely adored the childhood friend. She came in and she just was too adorable. Has this kind of,
you mean Taiga?
Yeah, right. She's got this kind of synthetic thing going on. I almost did too. I had to look her up. She has this kind of tsundere thing going on that it absolutely is just too sweet. Most of the characters, each one with their own little quirk, add a lot of flavor to the hijinks that will ensue as the story progresses. So I really loved it. Really goofy, lots of fun. Loved it.
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the page of this show doesn't really necessarily do anything incredible. The way that I kind of put it is, if you are a huge fan of the old nostalgic, or if you have this nostalgia for the old, essentially the harem stuck in a dorm, which was at some point a thing in anime. I mean, obviously Love Hina is the one that everybody knows, but there was a lot of them that kind of centered around this idea of one person, one boy living along with a whole bunch of other girls in a house, a home, a mansion, a dorm, a hot spring, something that kind of brings them all into one house and causing shenanigans of either ecchi or just harem shenanigans. And this is definitely something we haven't really seen in quite a long time. And so to have out of nowhere, boom, here's this like old school harem ecchi comedy show coming out of nowhere was kind of shocking. And so it was obviously the reason why I wanted to check it out was kind of getting that nostalgia feeling that I got from seeing the trailers and stuff. Like, hey, this is like one of those old school harems that you don't see anymore. And I think for that aspect, it delivers. It's kind of like it delivers both on the facet of here's this old, you know, tried and true formula that used to be a huge success back in the day. Come back and now we get to experience it again, which I think the last time we really had one was probably the girl that was the hot spring ghost girl.
Yeah.
That was like a long time ago, too. But anyways, it hits on that. And so that's what you're going to get here. So if you do like those old ecchi harem comedies, you're going to get something new here. Because I think it does everything of that well. Like, it's not a throwaway in that regard, because the characters are great. I enjoyed all the characters. Atena was just a mess. And she just couldn't control herself. And she has, it seems like a manphobia thing, but it's not really. It's just an aspect that if she's around men because of the thing that happened to her in her previous dorm, she just kind of freaks out and then she gushes blood out her nose and falls over, which is typically usually the male character that does that. But here we have the female character doing it instead. You have the Frey, who is the cosplay girl. She just wants to put everybody into cosplay. But even still, later on, you kind of see her use that to bring Kyoshi out of his shell, which I thought was really cute, and it was kind of unexpected. I think Frey ended up turning into be my surprise hit of the show. Mineru's kind of the geeky science girl that creates things that could possibly kill the entire nation if she let it leak out of her lab. Serene is kind of like the, almost like the emotional doll, emotionless doll kind of character. She has like some weird thing about the moon and power and stuff like that does weird stuff.
And that was one of those
very
things.
Very supernatural.
Yeah.
Kiriya is kind of the tomboy character. She was raised with a bunch of other boys, you know, doing karate and stuff. And so she can't really control her strength, especially when she reads shoujo manga. And then Tsuteya, who, again, is the childhood friend that's more the tsundere type, getting to her where she has, like, an issue with heat. And so even though she was isolated because of that disability, he always kind of came and tried to help her out in some way, which was really adorable. It's one of those cases where usually with these types of show, there's always, like, you know, these characters you like, these characters you don't like. This one just has a nice cast of characters that I really enjoyed watching, mixed in with, yes, obviously, ecchi. This is, depending on where you watch it, it's probably going to be, you know, a lot of nudity, so keep that in mind. It doesn't stray from a lot of that stuff. And I think, again, to attribute to Ass Reed and the adaptation of this, it's a very good-looking harem show. And they did a really good job. Obviously, if your show is driven by cute characters and, again, ecchi, it needs to look good and on model. And they pulled that off with this show. They kept it on model. The characters look cute. Yes, the nudity looked good. All that kind of stuff works well for it to create a really solid old-school ecchi harem comedy stuck under one roof type of show that I think is refreshing for those looking for that. But again, I will say it. If you don't like nudity, if you don't like harems, if you don't like the tropes of the harem, you're not going to want to watch the show. There's not going to be anything here for you. But for those looking for that and want that nostalgia, you're going to get a really solid-looking show with good characters and some pretty heartfelt moments kind of mixed in there that I really wasn't really expecting from a goofy, ecchi harem comedy show. So that's where I kind of lay. So if that sounds good to you, definitely check out Mother of Goddess Dormitory. Again, it's on High Dive. So I know that most people don't really know where it's at. They're like, where's this show at? Oh, yeah, High Dive. I forgot that place exists. There you go. So moving on. The honor student at Magic High School, or Mohoka Koko no Yutsuse. This one streamed on Funimation, ran for 13 episodes, done by Studio Connect. Sources of manga. Genres are fantasy, magic, sci-fi. And yes, for those that don't remember, this is a show about... Essentially, we had the Irregular at Magic High, which is a show about a guy named Tatsuya, who, along with his sister, joined this magic school because this world essentially discovered magic. And at some point, all the nations were obviously trying to train up the best magic users, obviously, possibly for war. And so Tatsuya, along with his sister, joined this one school. And Tatsuya seemingly scores low on all the normal ways of scaling magic use because he's sort of an irregular, hence the name of the title. And there's like this kind of class system between, you know, the blooms and not blooms, people that are good with magic or not good at magic at the school. And so you kind of see a little bit of issue there. And this particular one, the honor at high school, essentially follows the sister, who is the honor student, not the irregular. And basically replays out the first season again? Question mark?
Yeah, pretty much. Not all the way to the ultimate battle that Tatsuya goes to, but it seems like there's time skips here and there that it's kind of hard to keep up with. I really, really need to get back to I really wanted to go back and watch the original show to see if I could kind of get a, because Andrew had mentioned something that I didn't catch, and I don't know that it necessarily matters, but at the same time, I didn't catch it at all in any way, shape or form. Andrew was mentioning that there's slight changes in the storyline.
Oh, the deviations, yeah.
Yeah, which I don't think it really matters, but when it comes down to it...
I think it does, but I think the grand scheme of things, it doesn't, but it kind of affects characters and their... The way they handle situations, I think, is technically, in my opinion, makes a difference. Like, if a character steps forward to protect somebody or somebody would break a rule... I think that's obviously a huge deviation in their personality and what they do. So that's just my thoughts.
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the main reasons why I want to go back and watch it, because of the fact that I'd like to see how much of a difference those would have made in my opinion of the show. I really like I made no bones about it. I've always liked the aesthetic of the show. I like a lot of the characters. There is certain things about Tatsuya that kind of bug me. But when it comes down to it, overall, I've always liked the storyline, and I've liked the story itself and the characters. So having kind of this extra story, I really kind of just jumped right on in, and especially since it's from the girls' side, which I do like a lot of the girls. So seeing the show from that perspective, I've had a lot of fun, enjoyed going through the three or whatever, however many competition. So getting a lot of that, and it seems like it was more focused on that. In some respects, it was more focused on those in general, not on Tatsuya's end, which Tatsuya was doing a lot of stuff in the background, if I remember right. So getting it from the actual perspective of the girls, it was a little bit of fun there. So I really did enjoy this story. It worked really well. I liked it. If you like the Magic High School genre per se, if you want to call it a genre, the storyline, you'll probably really enjoy this. It was really well done, and I liked it.
All right, Peach Boy Riverside. This one is streaming on Funimation, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Asahi Production. The source is a manga. The genres are fantasy shonen. The director on this one was Shigeru Ueda, who did Geki Doll. The series composition was done by Keiichiro Ōchi, who did Quintessential Quintuplets, Hinamatsuri, The Demon Scroll Next Door. And the creator of this one was actually Shinja Kukun, who, of course, created Miss Kobayashi's Dragon Maid, as well as Komori-san Can't Decline, and I Can't Understand What My Husband Is Saying. So, very interesting, different take from Kukun. But, yeah, moving on, we have essentially follows... Oh, my gosh. I'm already thinking about the stupid episode scramble that they did. Essentially, in this world, it's kind of a medieval times type of setting. There is Oni, who are these very powerful beings that will obviously have a thing against humans, and they will harm humans. And on the other side, we obviously have humans who don't trust demi-humans or Onis, because obviously they kill entire nations. And in a kind of mix in between there are these Peach Boys, which are essentially people that have... Their eyes can turn into like almost like a peach, and they have the strength to take on the Oni. You get a little bit of history into this one person that had the ability to take on the Oni. They had the Peach Boy aspect to them, took down the Onis, and at some point that creates revenge, and revenge begets revenge. So there's a lot of aspects of revenge in this world. Mainly we focus on following a girl named Sari, who was a princess of a kingdom that was about to be wiped out by one of these Onis. She eventually leaves her kingdom to go traveling to kind of see the world. And so she's experiencing for the first time all these aspects of the world itself. Humans, demi-humans, Onis, the discrimination between each one of them. And her whole focus turns into she wants to essentially create a world where everybody can live together. Because she's walked alongside demi-humans. She's walked alongside Onis. And she feels like they can come together to essentially have peace between them. On the other side of the whole facet, you do follow a lot of the time Makoto, who is one such person who has experienced a lot of bloodshed in his past, and his whole focus is to just kill Onis. And there's a gap in his heart, and he feels the only way he can fill it is by killing Onis. And this is a unquenching thirst, obviously. So despite Sari, who he ends up eventually meeting, wanting to have coexistence, Makoto just seeks to kill every Oni that he ever sees. So kind of creates an interesting dynamic between the two of them. And, yeah, your thoughts on Peach Boy Riverside?
I'm really, really mixed on this show. In general, I like the storyline. I like a lot of the characters. I think my biggest problem, if I was to give any kind
of... Let me guess. The episode layout.
That was a big... I didn't much care for.
Let me give people an example here. You usually have show... And this is so funny, because Chris watched it before me, and he kept complaining about how they were jumping around. And I'm like... Okay, early on when I watched the show, there was a jump at some point, and I did hate that. But no, it keeps doing it. To give people like an idea of how mixed up the show is, it is one complete story. Like, if you were watching it in order, it feels like this was adapted into one complete season. But it's almost as it feels like they took a complete adaptation, and then they took that, and they just scrambled it randomly. To give people an idea... If you look on Wikipedia for Peach Boy, you can actually find the episode count, like the chronological order that it should be in. And this is, to give you guys an idea, this is how they ended up laying it out in the adaptation. Episode 4 to 1 to 2 to 7 to 11 to 12 to 5 to 6 to 3 to 8 to 10 to 9. Like, this is...
Oh, my God.
It makes it makes no sense why it's ordered the way that... Like, I honestly, in my review, on my video review, I was frustrated because I'm, like, thinking to myself, usually when there's a time jump and there's a jumping in time, it's because they're trying to establish aspects in another time period that will affect this time period. Like, there's a correlation to why it needs to jump around. This made zero sense. The only thing I can think of is that the production committee was like, there's nothing here that we like, so let's just mix it up and make it cause a stir in people, and so people will talk about it in a negative light, and that'll get people to go check it out. Like, it was almost like they wanted a negative reaction to the fans just so that people would check it out. Because I don't understand any other reason why. Sorry, go ahead.
I didn't realize it was that messed up. I do remember there was one particular, and I chopped it up. And this is one of the main reasons why I kind of just started to let it go, because I kind of seriously thought that it was just designed, it was written this way for whatever. One thing kind of made sense. Because it was like, once it was all said and done, it was like, okay, I guess that kind of makes sense why you had to have that there. But some of the other ones didn't make any sense. A random going into another Peach Boys backstory, and it was randomly placed, and then they now you're making me drag up my irritation of this.
I had to get it out of the way. It's the elephant in the room. I have to get it out of the way so we can talk about the rest of it.
It is. The storyline was so frustrating to get through, because I tried to be very patient with the show. I already had to set aside a lot of my frustrations with, and it wasn't really that bad. But it is technically a dark show, and I was already kind of trying to set that aside. And then to get into this kind of more, because I like the main girl, I liked Frau, I liked Carrot, I technically liked Hawthorne. The addition of a couple of other characters a little bit later, I liked them. I thought Todoroki's storyline was really well done. When it comes down to it, that didn't save the show for me. All it did was kind of put me in the middle. I like the characters. The storyline was decent. I was very interested to see the main girl's kind of idealism becoming more to the forefront. Her idealism
do you like how she eventually gets to the point where, okay, this is my idealism, and I've decided this is how I can enact it. Force. It's like, because it literally doesn't stray from the idea that her perspective of what she wants is literally impossible. Like, there's no way this can be a thing, because there's too many people on each side that are too on the extremes. And so what she decides at some point is because you will never see it my way, because you have a power that nothing else has, I will force you. And I'm like, it makes sense. That not that it technically does break her. You can see it as a way of like, well, that's hypocritical. That doesn't make any sense. But that's what she has chosen. How are you going to argue it? That's what she chose. That's how she can achieve it. And so it doesn't do the whole thing where, like, I don't know, like a Gundam Wing, where it has this person that's so passive they will allow things to burn around them to claim that they will eventually get this point which they are going to have full peace. You can't. It's not going to happen here. So what does she do? Well, since I can't have this without force, I will use force. And I do like that. It's a respectful thing. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I agree. That's what it comes down to is I liked those concepts. To me, the general motivations to me felt a little bit flimsy in a lot of cases. It was almost like the characters, while the characters were good, I like the characters, they weren't written strong enough. They were only surface level. when it comes down to it, maybe that's just because we didn't get far enough into the story. Maybe they felt like they had to cover too much ground to make this. I mean, they're throwing everything every which way anyway. The storyline is all mixed up. So maybe that's, they felt that they had to get all this in very quickly. But when it comes down to it, in general, it just felt very flimsy as far as the character motivations. So take that for what it is. I'm very mixed on this show when it comes down to it.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating because a lot of our frustration was around the whole jumping around in times and episodes, literally. Which is funny because if we're reviewing it, technically everybody that hears this review and decides to go watch it can essentially watch it in order. Like I said, it's literally, if you were to watch it in order of like I just gave on the Wikipedia page and everything, it will not feel like it's a jumbled show because it will feel like it was adapted that way and it was just scrambled afterwards. It doesn't feel like that jump. I think there was only one point where she didn't really technically explain how she got to this point where she was deciding between two people. Like, literally one episode opens up, and this character that's been in the background for a long time is suddenly before Saadi, and she's deciding between two people. And it never explains how she got to that point. But it was another jump. So that's the only point that I can say, honestly, it doesn't explain how she got to stand before them two and make this. I know what this decision is. Obviously can draw the conclusion because based on what each of these people have talked about on their own ends, but getting to how she stands before these two people, it was never explained. Everything else was pretty much in line. Everything else is explained. Everybody else's decisions at some point are explained because you eventually get to finding out how they meet. And so that's the frustrating thing is I don't want to give too much emphasis on my final thoughts based on how scrambled the episodes are because everybody that will watch it from this point on will get a chronological order that they can watch it, and they will never have that problem. Other than that, yes, I agree. I like a lot of the characters. I think that's a lot of my driving force. I think a lot of the characters turn out to be great. I had my issues early on with why they chose to bring Carrot along with them, because literally mass destruction and death caused by the character should not be suddenly, let's pull you into the group because you're cute. But that's just sorry. So that's how it's going to be. Yeah, a lot of the characters they've introduced were great. I'm still interested to see what they... I think the only character I'm really interested to see more of, if they ever do a sequel, is Frau. Frau is like the most...
Frau's the most interesting.
Yeah, the most interesting and most curious character out of all of them. There's still so much mystery behind Frau. Everybody else is pretty plain. It's like, you know, it's either an Oni, it's a half Oni, it's a demi-human, it's a human, it's a, you know, a destructive person, a peaceful person. There's a dog that talks. I guess the dog talking is still a thing that we still have to address, but everybody has, like, a pretty clear-cut idea of what you're going to get from them. Obviously, Sumeragi still has some mystery about him as well. Obviously, that was never really answered, but, yeah, it's got a good cast of characters that Hall are, yes, a lot of them are pretty plain-cut who they are, where they're standing are, some obviously being probably in the middle more, but how they handle a lot of those situations is really great. And like I said, getting more into Carrot and apparently at some point getting a more idea of her inner conflict, addressing concepts like, you know, discrimination, Sari's kind of peaceful nature despite there being so much bloodshed around her, super gigantic demon beam or Oni beams that take out entire nations. All that stuff is kind of something that you want to eventually get into more. But yeah, overall, it was a solid show. I liked the characters that introduced. The stories themselves were fantastic. Just, again, put aside the fact that it's just a scrambled mess, and it's a solid show in the end. So hopefully if we do get a sequel, they won't do as much mixing up. If they could do another season and I suddenly feel like they would time jump again, I'm just going to wait until the show's ended. Yeah. I purposely forced myself to watch it in order because I wanted to give it an honest review of it as an entirety. I could have probably waited and watched it out of order, but or in order, but... Good show though. Just a lot of crazy fantasy power action stuff, and I think it's some of the best of that particular nature. And so some good action scenes too. So yep, that's Peach Boy Riverside. Check that out if that's interesting to you. Welcome to Demon School, Aaron McCoon's second season, Chris. We had 21 episodes on Crunchyroll. They already have a third season announced, so obviously a lot of people are watching this.
Yay!
Bandai Namco Pictures is working on it. Sources of manga, genres are comedy, demons, supernatural, fantasy, shonen. So, yeah, your thoughts on second season. More Ira McCune working in the school of demons, and he's a human. He shouldn't be there.
I'm going to try and be kind of quick on this one. I really loved the second season. Ira McCune had an evil spell. He Amelia had a kind of a moe spell. We had a couple of other kind of really cool things. We introduced a little bit more tidbit of the quote unquote demon lord and how the demon lord becomes the demon lord, and kind of teasing a little bit more about the prophecy involving the next demon lord. So a lot of really kind of neat things that are, if you've already watched the show and you're holding out on this season, I don't know why. Pretty much, I'm sure I'm the only one who's actually watching the show, but it is what it is. I love it. Can't wait to get more of it.
I think if they have announced three seasons, I think more than just you will watch the show.
Probably nobody that listens to us. Maybe. Who knows? He'll tell me.
There you go. Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid S is our next one. Kobayashi-san Shi no Maid Dragon S. This one's streaming on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes, done by Studio Kyoto Animation. Welcome back, Kyoto Animation. Source is a manga. The genres are slice of life, comedy, fantasy. And of course, this is another one that was created by Kyokun. So, I don't know. I'm going to say that right. Cool. Kyo. I keep saying Kyokun or something like that. It's cool. Kyo. So, yeah. There you go. Yeah, for those that don't know what Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid is, that's a shame. You should go watch the first season. Please go now. Essentially follows an office worker named Kobayashi who eventually, in a drunk stupor, stumbles upon a dragon up in the hills and kind of talks out their problems and eventually pulls this sword from the back of this dragon. And in a drunk stupor, eventually agrees for the dragon to stay with her at her home. And sure enough, the next morning when she sobers up, she wakes up to a knock on the door, and there is the dragon in a human form in a maid outfit, because this dragon obviously knows that Kobayashi likes French maids, the aesthetic of them. So she starts staying there and taking care of her, and over time, other dragons either come to stay with Kobayashi or stay in the same city as them.
Yeah.
Obviously, one is Lokua, who ends up being summoned by this boy mage, and she's huge and he's a young boy, so obviously that's an issue. One person that Kobayashi works with ends up having Fafnir stay at his house and becomes a gaming geek. Elma is another person that ends up working with Kobayashi, and yeah, it's just all out shenanigans. A lot of the first season is really kind of focused around the concept of Kobayashi accepting others to be with her because she's always been alone. And so it's this concept of her being a single woman, eventually accepting a family, which she never really thought that she ever would. She always just kind of wanted to be alone. Whereas I think the second season's more kind of opening up with, in the opening of the second season, we get the introduction of Ilulu, who is another dragon, a part of the Chaos faction of dragons. And over time, we eventually get insights into this other world where the dragons came from, which has gods. It has the Chaos faction of dragons. It has the Harmony faction that wants to seek peace along with the gods. And then there's the Spectator faction, which was the ones that just don't want to get involved anymore. They're like, we're tired of this war. We just don't want to get involved anymore. So getting a lot of the information about that, getting more backstory into Elma, getting backstory of Toru, pretty much everything that led up to the current time. So that's kind of the focus of the second season too. Thoughts.
Is there any other thoughts other than I love it? So, no, it looks great. I really do love the fact that Kyo Annie is back, with a show that's pretty much just showing, hey, we're still strong. The storyline is great. I love a lot of these characters. They even got to show off here and there with a couple of scenes. There was actually a scene a little bit later that I was fully expecting that they were going to turn it into a show off scene. They totally subverted my expectations and didn't do it. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. Characters are great. Story is great. The visuals look very solid all the way through. So love it.
I think the interesting thing about this particular season is, as I mentioned before, it's interesting that the first season was so focused on Kobayashi and had a lot of... I think the first season, mostly the focus is kind of like this heavy comedy, but always having this kind of subtle heart that wasn't mixed into with it. A lot of notes about discrimination, dragons not understanding that aspect of discrimination. Again, the dragons learning about Kobayashi and Kobayashi's inability to accept family. A lot of that was a focus of the first season. And it even comes to the climax of the first season is centered around Kobayashi accepting a family. And I think in the second season, that kind of shifts a little bit because I think a lot of the comedy takes a lot of the backseat. Like, I honestly don't think this was a heavy comedy season. A lot of this season was so focused on essentially getting into Toru, getting into why she is there, why she likes Kobayashi, Kobayashi learning why Toru loves her so much, getting into Elma, Elma's backstory, getting into where Kana came from, getting into Iludu, getting into the dragons, getting into that world. So it seems like a lot of the comedy took a little bit of a backseat, but a lot of the focus turned on to character development, which I thought was very surprising because I never really thought that I wanted to get a lot of information about these characters. I mean, granted, yes. I mean, if you asked me when I was watching the first season, hey, would you like to know more about Elma? I'd go, shoot, yeah, that'd be great. Can I? It's not that I needed it. It's just like, okay, if they present it to me, I'm going to take it. So I don't think don't get me wrong, that's a bad thing that the comedy takes a back seat. It's just that it's not as heavy of comedy in the second season as the first season. So much of this focus of this season is heart. It's so much focus on family. It's about love. It's about the characters themselves and developing them and making them into really strong characters. And I loved every single bit of that. Yes, mixed in there is some fantastic animation pieces that just seems like Kyoto Animation is just absolutely flexing and nobody's going to be able to stand up against them. It's literally them towering over their opponent saying, we're back, and yes, we still do some incredible animation, and you're going to be shocked by this. Not that anybody had any doubts, honestly, but it's great. It's one of those things, it's like a fantastic comeback for Kyoto Animation after such a long time of not having them around. That was very disheartening. So it's a great comeback. It's visually pleasing. Animation's top-notch. The character moments are always fantastic. It's just a perfect show all around. It's a great, fantastic addition to the Kobayashi Dragon Maid franchise, which we obviously absolutely love the first season. Definitely an interesting, different take of comedy usual. And it was interesting, too, because it's one of those things where you get a show that opens up as a first season again. It's a very comedy-centric show. Obviously, the shenanigans of dragons living amongst humans. But it was one of those things where, as you get into the second season, it's kind of shocking just how much this writer, I guess, had in plan for the characters. Now, again, I don't know if it could be a thing where the writer's like, you know, crap, I need to make more content, so let's just start to dive into this, or let's try to explain this. I don't know if the writer had this stuff in check and thought prior to even starting everything, but it's interesting to see just how much thought process is being put into things. The biggest shock that I really had in this season was really getting to the idea that technically they established that these dragons have to mimic humans to obviously live amongst them. But it's showing all these different facets of a dragon adopting things into their mindset that they don't actually acknowledge in their world. One such thing, to give an example, is that the dragons don't necessarily have a concept of adult, becoming an adult. So that's an aspect that they themselves had to adopt when they came to this world. There's this conversation between Makoto and Fafnir talking about this, and he's like, you do realize that we don't even understand the concept of adult. We're just adopting it because it's our way of fitting in this world. And again, I don't know if Kyo is actually planning this stuff ahead of time, but it's getting into those kind of things that really do expand the world itself, along with the characters getting more depth to them, and the concept of love between the characters and partnerships progressing even further. And I think it's just, again, taking that concept and adapting it so beautifully by Kyoto Animation that just makes this show, the franchise itself, just one of the best anime out there. So if you've not guessed it already, guys, don't watch this show. Moving on. Yeah, I highly recommend Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid S. If you have not watched the first season, please go watch it. Give it a shot. Like I said, you're going to give it a little bit of a different feel in the second season, but it's still fantastic. Plus, there's tons of shorts, too. And the shorts are always way adorable, too, which I guess we technically could mention, too. The Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid S minis were really adorable, too. So I like the Kana one. That was really cute, where she shielded her from the water. It was really cute. So, yeah, definitely check that one out. And our last one we have is I'm Standing on a Million Lives Season 2, our 100 mon no inochi no ue ni ore wa tateru second season. This one streamed on Crunchyroll, ran for 12 episodes. The studio was Mahou Films. The source is a manga. The genres are action, game, drama, fantasy, shonen. And for those unfamiliar with the I'm Standing on a Million Lives franchise, it essentially follows school kids that at some point are being pulled into another world where they are assigned a class. They have to complete a quest before they're allowed to ask the game master, or what do you want to call him, this weird being that's doing this, a question before they're ushered back into the real world where they're assigned to find another member of their party that will eventually be dragged into the world with them, given a class, and then they do another quest. And eventually, and essentially in the first season, it opens up with the fact that this girl named Shindo, who's kind of like a very pretty classmate that is a model and everything, she was the first one to be dragged into this world. And eventually she had to pull this other girl, Hokusaki, who's kind of a weak girl. She has a weak constitution. She's pulled in there as well. And then the third person that's eventually pulled into the party is Yatsuya, who's kind of pretty much the main character that we focus mostly on. And Yatsuya is dragged in there, and he's, the shtick in the first season is that he's always assigned the worst classes, while everybody else gets, like, wizard, which is arguably probably the worst. It never seems useful. Weapons classes, there's, like, one for each weapon, and then there's, like, a master elite weapon class after that. But Yatsuya is always given, like, the ones that are, like, the lowest percentage chance on the wheel of chance, but it's always, like, farmer, chef, blacksmith. He's always given, like, these really crappy classes, and he always has to kind of work some way around using that to actually win encounters. But yeah, as we finished the first season, we eventually brought in some geeky girl named Tokatate, and then eventually at the very end, this guy named Tori, who's from a family that's obviously in some bad times. His mother's being kind of forced to do some stuff. But yeah, as we open up the second episode, they go into another quest, and eventually the second half of the season goes into an additional quest. So your thoughts on the second season?
I'm so mixed on this. I feel at this point that I'm actually feeling kind of like this storyline has kind of overstayed its welcome on me, at least. I kind of went into this very hopeful. It's a strange place that I've fallen to on this show. I liked the concept that was so effectively out of the norm on how they were doing an isekai. This one was kind of one where they were isekaiing into the show, and then they were going back to their real world. And how this was actually changing those characters in general was kind of the hook that got me. Basically, how they were affecting the other world, and they were seeing the results of the effect of that, how much of an effect they had on that world. And at the same time, and how it was affecting those characters. So they quote unquote should be growing. Unfortunately, I'm not seeing any character growth. These characters are the main character for perfect example. Okay. Basically the main character is he's going through some really stuff that should be affecting him, and it should be changing who he is as a person. These are not menial, silly things like a girlfriend or something like that. These are really life-changing decisions that he is technically making. And yet they're not affecting him. They're not changing him. They're not shifting his perspective on anything. He's just who he is the entire time. And I'm at this point, I'm really, really frustrated with him. On the side, yeah, you have a couple of other characters that seem to be kind of revolving around things that he is making, his decisions that he's making. None of them are trying to confront him in any way, shape, or form. And I'm trying to talk about this from a surface level of effectively the entire show. I'm getting frustrated because I'm, as much as I'm investing in the show, as far as time, I want to feel rewarded, and I'm not feeling rewarded. None of the decisions, it's staying on the surface level. The main storyline seems to be doing some things, I appreciate the things that it's doing, but none of them are affecting these characters in any way. And I'm getting very frustrated with the story. So that's where I'm kind of stuck with on this. I want to see more. Unfortunately, I don't feel like I'm getting my time is being respected in any way.
I kind of disagree. I agree with certain aspects of what you're saying, but I'm not really, I think you're missing certain points of it. Because yes, obviously the biggest issue that's always been, well, I'm assuming with you as well, the biggest issue that we always have with this series is Yatsuya. He's kind of the character that they're trying to put in this gray area of that he is willing, he hates the real world so much, and yet he's being put in a situation where he has to complete these quests in order to get stronger to possibly one day have to save the real world. They're essentially training themselves to the day that their world will be attacked. And it always paints this picture that Yatsuya hates the real world. And it never really gave us an idea of why he hates the real world so much. There was some stupid tree that they buried something and some construction happened, and now apparently he hates the world. Eventually, at some point in this season, they have him explain the idea that he hates humans, which he is, because they choose to destroy things that are inconvenient to them. And yet he says this the moment he destroys something that's inconvenient to him. And so it always paints this picture that he's obviously, he knows that he is a hypocrite. And yet it never really changes him. And the thing that I got so frustrated so much about this season, similar to Chris getting frustrated so much with this season, it was more the idea that it was painting this idea that even though he admits early on in the season that he would choose to sacrifice these people because he finds these other two people are critical for him to reach his goal. So he's essentially, this guy even asked him, you know, you're talking eugenics. He's like, yeah, that's pretty much it. Like he accepts it. He accepts the fact that he believes that this is a good thing, that he's willing to sacrifice some people in order to gain a goal. But yet it doesn't necessarily portray that being the case because he's constantly sobbing at the death of people. And it's like, well, those are blocks. You just said earlier, those are just pawns. And now you're affected by it. And so I'm like, well, the only way that they can do this properly is if at some point he acknowledges that he was crying there. But he never does. And that's the I agree with you in that sense. I am frustrated by the fact that it doesn't necessarily paint why Yatsuya is the way he is or that he's seeing some sort of change. Until the very end, suddenly out of nowhere, he goes, okay, I've changed. That's it. Okay, so I guess I'm assuming that he's changed because he seems like he's changed his perspective a little bit. But no, I think that they have confronted him a lot. Hakazaki is like constantly on him about his way of thinking. And it was great because they even had this moment where somebody goes, why do these people in this world like Yatsuya? And then again, Hakazaki says, because he treats them like humans, unlike us. And I'm like, dang! So the writer is acknowledging this and having his characters react to it. But at the same time, it never really truly does anything with it, I guess, to your point. It never really changes too much, even though it's technically showing signs of that in the very end.
I'm sorry, you are correct. There is the Hakazaki. I technically forgot about those
you
polls.
Better be sorry. Glinda's pushing him hard too. I really do like Glinda. I think she was a great addition to it because she looks like she's basically on the attack on a regular basis. Like you don't understand what she's constantly the one that's jumping in there and saying, you don't really think that way. You don't really think that way, do you? Which is funny because in his mind he's thinking like she doesn't know what I've been through, and I'm like, well, looks like Glinda's been through some crazy crap too, so I wouldn't go there. Her father's story was kind of screwed up. But no, it's like the other thing that we technically have to address is that it's the difficulty that we're facing right now is that we don't know if this will get a third season. And it's mainly because, for those that don't know, when they got to the second arc of the season, they chose to essentially have the characters choose, because they were presented two options for their next quest. And obviously, we've seen where they went to Zagrath, or whatever it's called, to protect the city from being destroyed. And there was another one that was to deal with a addiction issue that was in this kingdom. So the manga actually takes the addiction route, and they eventually chose to adapt this original from that point on and release a light novel on the side. So we don't know, I don't know exactly how long that addiction arc goes on to
that to as if they will have any sort of content to adapt. But like I said, I'm kind of with Chris on the idea that if the third season does get announced, I don't know that I would want to watch it. Because and it makes sense that the second arc of the season was anime original because it felt off. Like, the first arc was pretty strong. It was hitting on who really is the heroes. It was hitting heavy on basically wiping out an entire race for the sake of another. It was hitting on some heavy subjects that were really making the characters question themselves. It was hitting on Yatsuya having a very disgusting mindset of how to treat people like pawns. It was hitting on Hakazaki trying to call him out for it. It was hitting on so many really good subjects, despite being terribly adapted and the animation being awful. It was hitting on some heavy subjects. Like, there was a particular scene in that first arc that was like, wow, I feel really nasty watching this. This is kind of a screwed up situation. But it was making a point with it. And I'm perfectly fine with it making that point because I think it's interesting. Not that I'm happy with it. It's just an interesting point. But this second arc of the second season, I'm with Chris. At some point, I'm like, I am really kind of getting bored watching this. Like, nothing's happening to the characters. And I think it's because they were trying to hide any development because it was original. And that's what kind of frustrates
me. I wonder if that was my frustration, was just basically the stupid arc. Because
It was boring.
It's frustrating as all get out, that because I seen a lot of, even though technically and by all respects, this show should not theoretically work for me. It's not. My biggest frustration with this show is obviously characters. I don't feel like these characters are growing. And I get frustrated because the characters to me are not growing enough. The storyline itself is really kind of the weird thing that is working for me, because it has these weird tidbits in there that it's like, I would really like to see this explored. Like Andrew had mentioned earlier, the idea of they kind of just slipped it in there of the world that they're going to is technically Earth. It's just Earth in a different realm or a different dimension, or a kind of a, how did they put it? It was like,
it's not a game.
It's just the world in a different timeline per se. And so I like that concept. And so when they actually kill a character in the other world, they are theoretically murdering somebody. And so that weighed heavy on, supposedly that weighed heavy on Yatsuya. This also is technically, changing his perspective in later parts, where he is making decisions based on that. But when it comes down to it, to me, it doesn't feel like he's growing. However, the story is still quote-unquote interesting to me, and that's the frustrating thing, is now, is it because of this arc? I don't want to say, okay, because certain things happen to certain characters in this this particular arc, okay, well, that means Chris doesn't like... No, it's more than that. It doesn't feel like, even though they are... These decisions should be things that these characters should have changed their perspective on the decisions they're making. It's not, the consequences have not, for whatever reason, have not affected these characters on their core things. And these are not big or little things that have changed these characters. They should be bigger consequences that should have vastly changed these characters.
And it's funny, because do you remember one thing that made the first season so great that you've probably long forgotten about because it's been so long? One of the driving forces early in liking the series was how Yatsuya uses what he's got. Like, that was always the fun thing, was there was the mechanics that felt very gamey in a not game world. Like we mentioned before, it felt like a game because they had game mechanics to their systems. They had an equip screen where they could scroll through their weapons and select something and it appears. So it felt like a video game. So they treated it like a video game until they realized, no, it's just they themselves in that world have game mechanics, classes and spells and levels and ranks and all that kind of stuff. But one of the cool things that was always fun was, how does Yatsuya overcome these really incredibly powerful mobs? Like we mentioned before, the magic seems useless. They use a wind spell and it looks like it just puffs them and they just go, wow, that was a breeze. So they're always having to, like, utilize weird tactics to overcome things because they always seem like they're underleveled. And so to see Yatsuya use the chef class to know where the organs are in the mob, because obviously a chef would know where all the organs are to cut in the perfect places, so he knows where to stab. And that, again, was a little bit present in that first story in the second season, because you've seen where he uses blacksmithing because blacksmithing can create other weapons that they can actually, other heroes can actually wield, because normally you're not allowed to wield anything that's not in your job. So it's still utilizing those interesting methods of overcoming, again, a challenge that seems impossible. What was completely lacking in that second arc? That. There was one part, the very end, where he does something that seems like, whoa, I didn't actually think of that. That's a way to actually overcome this boss. But other than that, there wasn't really that cleverness in the writing and how they do stuff. Again, I'm assuming the writer still wrote that anime original arc, but it just didn't really feel like the usual season. So, I don't know. In the end, I'm kind of mixed on it as well. I thought the second arc was pretty meh. The first arc was, again, hitting on a lot of subjects, kind of frustrate me, but at the same time, very interesting. I'd be interested to see where it goes from here, but at the same time, I'm kind of on the same boat. If it's anything like the writing in that second arc, I've lost. I kind of agree with Chris in the idea that I kind of want to see, I guess, a clearer perspective of the mindset of the characters, and I don't think that they're really doing much with that. We've seen a lot of growth with Hakusaki. I think her going from being very timid and weak to at least trying to start to speak out and fight to get stronger, even though she's probably one of the weakest characters. Shindo, I haven't really seen anything from. Tokitate, I've really not seen any kind of growth from. Tori, sort of, especially the last arc. But yeah, just again, I agree with the idea that there doesn't seem to be much character growth, even though they're going through some really terrible stuff. So that's the thoughts on I'm Standing on a Million Lives second season. That's, yeah, check that out if that's interesting to you. So, Chris, before we conclude everything, I do want to give you a chance. Do you want to express what are your, of this list, is there anything that's standing out as possible Anime of the Year contenders?
Probably Kageki Shoujo. I don't know. I don't know that it would make it all the way, but Girlfriend, I'm really hot on that one. I really love that one.
You're really hot on that one? I wonder why you're so hot on that one.
And possibly Duke of Death. I did really have a lot of fun watching that show. That's probably where I would stand right now with these shows.
I think Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid S is definitely contender for Anime of the Year. I don't know about you, but I'll
Dragon
go with
Maid's
it.
Always there.
Yeah, I'm definitely having on a Kageki Shoujo. I think Kageki Shoujo is definitely. It's sad because it's one of those things where I think because it's not really getting much attention from everybody, I think it'll probably escape from my mind a little bit, but hopefully since I can write things down, I'll definitely remember to recall, at least watch my video on it and how extremely excited I was for the series when it ended. Definitely a case of Vanitas. I'm excited for the season of that, so that's definitely a contender for me. I think it's those three for me, is Case Study of Vanitas, Miss Kobayashi Dragon Maid, and Kageki Shoujo. I think Tsukimichi is definitely going to be contender for Isekai of the Year, for no doubt there. I mean, besides Java Spring Incarnation, obviously going to be snuffing out a lot of the Isekai realm. It's still going to be right there underneath it as one of the more solid Isekais out there. But yeah, for like romance and stuff, I think Duke of Death's going to be really solid. So, oh, let's not forget, Spirit Chronicles is definitely Anime of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a. No, I don't think we ever did a light novel bait. We need to make like a section for the most source material baity shows, just for Spirit Chronicles. I'm sure we could probably find some other shows that are pretty source material baity. So, yeah, that's it for this particular summer reviews. We do have for next week currently slated That Time I Got Reincarnated as a Slime second season part 2. My Hero Academia Season 5, How I Realist Hero Rebuilt the Kingdom, Remake Our Life, My Next Life as a Villainous, All Routes Lead to Doom, X, The Dungeon of Black Company, Battle Game in 5 Seconds, Drugstore Another World, Remain, Sunny Boy, Nighthead 2041, Higurashi Sutsu, The Idden Deities Know Only Peace, and I might do B Beastars second season. I don't remember if I have to look in our catalog to see if it's something. I don't think it's something that we've done a podcast on. I know I did a video review of it, but I might re-look at that and see, refresh my memory on it, and maybe do a review of that for the next episode, because I don't want to make sure that, even though I'm doing content for YouTube, I want to make sure that that content comes to the podcast, because we have a lot of people that have been supporting us for a long time and that only listen to our podcast, so I want to make sure that they're covered as well. The oddities for this particular review segments is the Aquatop on White Sand and the Great Jahi Will Not Be Defeated obviously are going into another core, so they will be going into the fall season. But the oddities are going to be Love Live Superstar and Fina Pyre Princess. Those are not going to be concluding until like late October. So they're not going to be able to fall within our usual review times. Thank you. For some reason, they wanted to schedule them like that. But so we might do like an offshoot recording for our thoughts on those two particular shows. So we'll see how that works out. Shows drop that I don't think I'll be picking back up is Magic Record second season, D-Side. I'm like in the middle of Tokyo Revengers, so I'm still up in the air if I'm going to finish that one. Life Lessons of Urimichi Onisan, Scarlet Nexus, and The Detective Already Dead, I don't think either one of us is going to be going back to.
Oh, that was the other one that I was planning on looking at. No, because...
What, Scarlet Nexus?
No.
Oh, Scarlet Nexus going into fall.
Detective was already dead. I kind of didn't want to let that one go. I ended up letting it go. But I do really kind of want to do Remake more than I want to watch that one, so...
Yeah, you're behind on Remake. We were supposed to do Remake review today, and Chris was behind on it, so I'm like, do you want to replace that with something? So that's why God of Storm is in this episode, because Remake was not finished by Chris yet. So that's all right. It's kind of hard to get us on the same page sometimes, but I'm trying to keep it. I don't want to do a review of something, and Chris is like, I was almost done with it. I could go to finish it. So yeah, that's our first part of our Summer 2021 Anime Season Reviews. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode. If you did, leave a like in the YouTube video, because we're going to have a YouTube video version of this. Make sure to tell other people about us. We appreciate everybody that supports us. Definitely everybody that supports us on Patreon. We definitely appreciate every single one of you. And again, everybody that supports us through telling other people about us, subscribing to our YouTube channel, and a lot of the good stuff. But yeah, as usual, we thank you all for listening. We hope you all enjoyed, and y'all take care.
Oos!風の強い夜は胸騒ぎで君は震えてる抱きしめてあげられるなら雪の化粧みたいに消えたっていいのに Say